across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening to you. How are you? Thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight here on Talk Radio. I know you're expecting Ian Lee, but it's a special programme tonight because obviously the events of the last few hours and of today, we're giving you the chance to continue your reaction to it, and we'll give you a view really from everyone who has something to say about this, including the most important opinion, which of course is yours. 0344 499 1000, to have your say about, simply to react about what happened today, about this Supreme Court ruling, and whether you agree with what they've had to say, that obviously suspending Parliament was unlawful, according to the Supreme Court. And also listening to James on the way in, it's really occurred to me that everyone is just so angry. They're either angry about this result, they're angry that it got to this stage, they're angry that no deal was taken off the table, they're angry that Parliament was prorogued. Whatever side of this debate you've been on for the last 3 years, everyone's so angry. What are you so angry about today, right now? What is it that is really prompting you to actually want to pick up the phone and have your say? We've had, I think it's fair to say, a pretty unprecedented number of callers to Talk Radio tonight, and that is because you are really, really angry about today's decision, and as I said, about various other things that have got us to this stage. So I really want to hear from you. I want to hear from you about what you think should happen next, and I want to hear from you about, I don't know, whether you think we should leave with no deal, whether you think Boris Johnson should resign. Where do you think all of this should go? 0344 499 1000. Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament was unlawful, according to the Supreme Court. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to get a roundup of how we got to this stage and what really the implications are of today's ruling. But I want to know what you think. I want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. Now, many of you genuinely believe that today's decision was politically motivated, and I think that's a really, really dangerous road for us to go down. And again, I almost think that, well, I do think, actually, that this isn't about remain or leave. This is about whether you trust and believe our judiciary. And I think it's fair enough to trust and not trust our MPs, but our judiciary, yes, we might question their logic on the things that are at their discretion. For instance, I think many of us have sat and got angry, haven't we, at judges that have maybe given rubbish sentences or made ridiculous comments. But actually, when it comes to the rule of law, don't we trust our judiciary on that? Isn't that the whole point? Isn't that almost the whole point of Brexit? And the whole point of us wanting to leave the EU is to have our own sovereignty, to have our own control over our own laws. Well, you got it today. You really did. So I want to know why you're so angry. I want to know why this has made you so angry, when actually there is an argument to say that this was the biggest act of sovereignty, really, because, of course, it was the Supreme Court, the UK Supreme Court. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Now, bearing in mind where all this started, and this is, of course, the Supreme Court hearing, Lady Hale, who delivered the result earlier, when the result was starting, the Supreme Court hearing, rather, was starting, she gave a really great speech about whether this was going to be a political decision. And I think it's worth us reminding ourselves of that. So this was Lady Hale on day one.
We have before us two appeals, one from England and Wales and one from Scotland. They both involve the same issue: whether it was lawful for the Prime Minister to advise Her Majesty to authorise the prorogation of Parliament. It is important to emphasise that we are not concerned with the wider political issues which form the context for this legal issue. The determination of this legal issue will not determine when and how the United Kingdom leaves the European Union.
So there we go. That was Lady Hale, day one, saying that this legal hearing will not in any way be about when or how or anything to do with us leaving the EU. It is simply about the rule of law regarding the prorogation of Parliament. Simply that. Not even for the reasons, not even for anything else. Just the simple rule of law. Let's remind ourselves before we get up to speed about where we are now with all of this. Let's remind ourselves of Lady Hale actually delivering the result.
This court has already concluded that the Prime Minister's advice to Her Majesty was unlawful, void, and of no effect. This means that the order in council to which it led was also unlawful, void, and of no effect, and should be quashed. This means that when the Royal Commissioners walked into the House of Lords, it was as if they had walked in with a blank sheet of paper. The prorogation was also void and of no effect. Parliament has not been prorogued. This is the unanimous judgment of all 11 justices.
So there we are. That was the result that was delivered today by Lady Hale. Obviously quite unprecedented to find that the Supreme Court is telling a UK serving Prime Minister that they acted unlawfully. Why is this of such relevance? Why is this so important? And how did we get here in the first place? Well, Ross Powell is our news reporter and he joins us live in the studio. Evening to you, Ross.
Evening to you, Christo.
So I'll ask you that first question, really. How did we get to the Supreme Court hearing?
Well, of course, we had two hearings, didn't we, in the Scottish High Court and the English High Court a week or two ago, and they reached sort of differing verdicts, the English Court effectively backing the government, but the Scottish Court siding with Gina Miller, who's kind of brought one of these cases to this level. And so, essentially, you know, it had to go to the Supreme Court to decide, and, you know, there's been all sorts of, you know, phone-ins on this radio station and many others, and I'm sure we'll hear it, that saying that, you know, this is the court sort of getting involved into politics, but it's simply not the case. They were asked to decide on this, and as we heard, as you mentioned there, Lady Hale saying that, you know, we're just concerned with the legality of you know, whether it was legal to prorogue Parliament.
And what does she mean when she says that essentially Parliament was not prorogued?
Yeah, well, this was something that confused me earlier, because essentially when Parliament was prorogued a week or so ago, you know, the MPs all kind of trooped out, and essentially now what she's saying is that was null and void. So now we are, the parliamentary session which we thought had ended has now continued. We're still in parliamentary session, so all those bills that potentially have been killed off by the proroguing of Parliament, they're now back on the table, essentially. So we now know that Parliament, John Bercow, has ordered Parliament to resume tomorrow at 11:30. There isn't going to be a Prime Minister's questions. So that's probably something that's quite important. People thinking that, you know, people are going to be lining up to direct questions at Boris Johnson. He will be there, but it won't be your normal PMQs. It's essentially going to be some urgent questions that will be put forward and some ministerial statements. So it's going to be a fiery exchange for sure, but not your average PMQs.
What can Boris actually do next if he wants to prorogue Parliament again? In theory, he could, couldn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's two things, because remember, the Conservative Party conference technically still has to take place. Labour have had theirs, of course, the Lib Dems having theirs. He could apply for a recess for the Tory conference, so that could still go ahead, but Labour have indicated they won't back this. He could, in theory, prorogue again. That would be very risky territory, I think, and I'm just not... I think his advisers, my hunch would be they'd try and avoid that. They would, I think, a recess to allow for something that was scheduled in the diary anyway would probably be the safer option, which I think is what we'd do.
But perhaps not likely. I mean, can they have the conference and have Parliament running at the same time?
In theory, potentially, but I don't think in practice that would really work, because the Prime Minister needs to be there. All of his front bench needs to be there. Jacob Rees-Mogg, the Leader of the House, needs to be there. So I just don't see how a conference and a parliamentary session could run side by side.
Now, the kind of language that Lady Hale was using was quite interesting. Void, she used a lot. Unlawful, she used a lot. No effect, she used a lot. What do those words actually mean when it comes to our listeners? Because a lot of people, I'll tell you why I'm asking this, because I've seen a lot of debate on social media where one side is saying, well, there you go, proof that Boris lied, misled the Queen, misled everyone. Other people on social media saying, no, he just followed the advice he was given in good faith. Turns out that advice was wrong, so Boris is supposed to be coming out of this looking quite good.
Yeah, I mean, Geoffrey Cox is the Attorney General. He's the person who gives the high legal advice to the government. So some stuff that was leaked to Sky News tonight indicates that his advice said that if you can prorogue Parliament, any sort of anyone who tries to get involved after that, like the Supreme Court have done, that will be seen as being politically motivated. That seems to be the advice that he was given. He's also got Dominic Cummings, of course, who's his sort of chief of staff, his chief aide, who, you know, is a staunch Brexiteer. So you've got to think essentially about the people who are around Boris Johnson. But the Attorney General, you know, is a, you know, someone who isn't going to be taken into a sort of political line. It's just that's simply legal advice. But yeah, there's going to be, this is going to run and run because, you know, we're in uncharted waters. And at a time when as many people have come on, political and not, saying, you know, we're in a time of crisis right now, politically and constitutionally, whether he can prorogue Parliament again is something that's very open to debate. But yeah, uncharted waters.
And why do you think he prorogued Parliament?
Why do I think he prorogued Parliament?
I mean, based, I know that you are impartial as our newsreader, but I mean, based on your experience, we know that people prorogue Parliament obviously because they need to start a new parliamentary session, they need to do the Queen's speech, all of this kind of thing. But it's the length of time that is the issue that Boris Johnson chose to do it for this amount of time and didn't put it, of course, to a vote in the House to allow the parliamentary session to end and a new one to start.
Yeah.
If I guess the point I'm trying to get to is, if this isn't about Brexit, why did he do it?
Well, I mean, it has been the longest, session of Parliament for quite some time. I forget the actual dates, but it's been a very, very long session of Parliament, approaching 2 years or just over. We are entering the conference season. That's not up for debate. Conferences do happen at this particular time. And actually, as many people have pointed out, we're actually, technically, only losing 3 or 4 days of actual parliamentary time.
It kind of depends on who you're listening to. I mean, some people are saying 3 or 4, maybe 5 days. Some people are saying, no, it's actually far longer than that. We usually only miss a few weeks. And obviously the circumstances at the moment are quite different because we're in a time, as you have said, of constitutional crisis. I guess I'm just trying to drill down about if this was an innocent suspending of Parliament just to try and get through a new Queen's speech so that we can focus on the domestic agenda. And it was nothing to do with trying to stop Parliament blocking a no-deal Brexit and to stop Parliament debating things. Why are so many people who voted Leave so angry about what happened?
Well, they're angry. You know, people who voted Leave want Brexit. You know, they want to see...
But Boris Johnson is saying that proroguing has nothing to do with Brexit. So how come people are so angry about the proroguing? You can't have it... I guess you can't have it both ways.
No, I see what you're getting at. But I think, look, Boris Johnson will say, you know, he prorogued Parliament because he wanted to you know, get this new agenda that he wants to get through. But lots of other people who are closer to the table may well have advised him that, you know, you need to try and run down the clock. That's one line of theory. We can't run away from that. And we are getting, of course, very close to this point in the middle of October when, if a deal hasn't been struck, then he has to go almost cap in hand to the EU leaders and say, I need an extension until the end of January. He said he'd rather be dead in a ditch than do that. He said he'd rather do or die.
He may well be politically dead in a ditch in order for that to...
I think what people have to bear in mind, look, we've said it a long time. We are living in uncharted waters politically, but Boris Johnson really is staking his whole career, his whole reputation. He's bet the house on getting the UK out of the European Union by the end of October. You know, that's what he's been elected to do, essentially. If he can't do that, a lot of people will say politically he's toast. We will have to surely have a general election sometime between the end of October and the end of January in that kind of extension period to clear the decks in Parliament, if you like. And that's what he wants to do because he needs that majority. Without that, he can't do anything.
Apparently, many people are now tweeting and saying, look, people said in the court that he is a liar. I mean, she never actually used those words.
It was
words like misled and words like unlawful. I mean, does that mean that he actually broke the law, or does that mean that he acted in an unlawful way, but perhaps without the intent?
Yeah, I think the second one is the way to be on the safe side. I would probably state my claim at the moment. If when this is all unravelled and there'll be, you know, inquiries or whatever, he will go back to the advice he was given by Geoffrey Cox, and I suspect Dominic Cummings, who is sort of chief political strategist. So I have a feeling that what they've been saying will come to the forefront.
And just finally, I think it's a good time, bearing in mind the position changes seemingly hourly, to find out where Labour and the other parties are with on their stance on Brexit, because I think Labour's stance officially changed again yesterday, didn't it? That now, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, they're saying that they would, if getting elected in a general election, they would negotiate a new deal,
yep.
but Jeremy Corbyn would remain impartial during the negotiation of that new deal. They would then put that new deal to a referendum
yep.
to the public, again, where Jeremy Corbyn says he would remain impartial, though some people on the Labour benches have said no, that they would unequivocally back Remain, thereby almost voting against their own deal that they've negotiated.
Yeah.
So that's where Labour are.
Yep.
Liberal Democrats now are that they would simply just revoke Article 50 if they got a majority yep. in Parliament, no ifs, no buts, and just
no referendum, just cancel the whole thing straight
away.
And
the Conservatives are do or die October 31st.
Yes, that is where everyone currently stands. I suspect, actually, we'll also see a bit more to-ing and fro-ing between the parties between now and any sort of future election. Because I think, you know, you saw yesterday in that voting chamber at the Labour conference, you know, it was decided on a show of hands, you know, what their Brexit policy is going to be. You know, the most.
And then there was an extraordinary moment. And again, I always thought that it was all about, maybe I'm a bit behind with my political trade union Labour conference theory here, but I thought it was one man, one vote. And it was an extraordinary moment yesterday where they were talking about certain votes from certain parts of the room meaning more than other parts of the room. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, my understanding, the unions have more of a say. Their vote carries more at a Labour conference, is my understanding. But yes, I think you will see some to-ing and fro-ing. Sir Keir Starmer, who's the shadow Brexit secretary, says he wants to campaign for Remain. Obviously, they're under pressure to back Jeremy Corbyn, but lots of people are saying his position carries very little weight. Well, I mean, I know he's the party leader, but trying to appeal to all these different people and appeal to nobody is not a strategy that can get you elected.
Surefire way of getting splinters in your bum, if you ask
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Ross Powell, thank you very much indeed. That's our news reporter, all that fence sitting of Jeremy Corbyn. But looks like they have got some sort of direction when it comes to their Brexit policy. Coming up, we're going to be talking to a lecturer in law at the University of Southampton again, just to find out where we are legally with all this, because I do want you to listen and I want you to form your opinion based on what you're hearing, and tell me why it is you're so angry. Got loads of calls to get through as well, which we'll try and get through one or two of those in the next 10 or so minutes as well. That's all coming up. It's Christo here on Talk Radio. Time now, 18 minutes past 10.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening, 20 minutes past 10. It's a special programme tonight with me, Christo, giving you the chance to give your reaction, to have your say about the Supreme Court ruling today that Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament was unlawful, according to the Supreme Court. All 11 judges deciding that it was unlawful, and the Prime Minister saying he profoundly disagreed with the ruling but would respect it. Well, let's now cross live to a lecturer in law at the University of Southampton, Asif Hamid, who joins us live on the line. Good evening to you, Asif.
Good evening, Christo.
So what did today's ruling actually mean? Unlawful was the word that was used. I'll ask you the same question that I asked our reporter. Does that actually mean that Boris Johnson broke the law?
It does. It does. So he broke the law of the Constitution, constitutional law. You know, there are different areas of law, and this area of law, the law of the Constitution, is the one that the Supreme Court thinks that he violated.
And he, of course, will be saying, as was seen by Sky News this evening, that the documents that were given to him by the Attorney General saying that it was going to be lawful, is that any kind of defence for him? Essentially, he was given bad advice?
I've seen some tweets relating to this. I think it's pretty disturbing, actually. Certainly the Attorney General will have some questions to answer, depending on the advice that he actually gave. We haven't seen that full advice yet. But the truth is, the buck stops with the Prime Minister. This is the Prime Minister's responsibility. This is the Prime Minister's decision. And he was well aware that there was lots of legal concern at the time about a possible prorogation. A lot of these issues were well ventilated.
And what can Boris, or indeed the government, do next? Is there another court? Because I understand the Supreme Court is the absolute highest court of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, that's right. So there is no further appeal from the Supreme Court. So this is the final verdict on this question.
I'm just thinking it would be somewhat ironic if the European Court of Human Rights were our Supreme Court now. Perhaps they could take it there. I mean, how important is this that actually that Boris is Prime Minister and that this has happened? I mean, have you ever heard in your lecturing in law, in your knowledge on this subject, have you ever heard of a Prime Minister of a sovereign state being told by their Supreme Court that they've acted in an unlawful way?
Not that I know of. I mean, and certainly not in the UK. I mean, this is unprecedented. And certainly when I saw the speech from Lady Hale this morning and then read the judgment, I mean, my jaw is still on the floor. I mean, it's extraordinary. I think the thing that strikes us most is that it was unanimous. Lawyers often disagree with each other, and so do judges. And we've seen that already with the Scottish and the English High Courts. But in this case, for all 11 judges to be unanimous on every single point, each of which was heavily contested in the hearing, that's just extraordinary.
And what do you think that Lady Hale said? I mean, we heard a little clip of what she had to say in her ruling earlier, but what out of the ruling, both in written form and verbal, did you hear that really kind of knocked your socks off, Asif?
I think there are a number of things. I mean, probably the most striking thing for me was that she went right back to basics. She went right back to some of the constitutional foundations, some of the history in relation to this, and took the view that the Prime Minister's decision was, and this comes through in the wording of the judgment, it was an extreme attack, I'm quoting, an extreme attack on the fundamentals of our democracy. That those are the words of the court. And the view was, well, okay, I mean, this is bad. Can the government provide any reasonable justification for this, any defense for this? And the judges were just not convinced that the government lawyers were able to provide any good reasons as to why this prorogation needed to happen at this particular time, of this particular duration, and so on.
Well, again, I'll make the point I made earlier, that as an onlooker, what seems strange to me is that why would they be fighting the prorogation and the Gina Miller and all of those people? Why would they actually be putting a defence up against those people if they weren't proroguing for scurrilous reasons, spurious reasons? It's because of the fact that they were doing so in order to precisely attack the fundamentals of our democracy. I almost think that it would have been better if they had been honest about it and said, we want to suspend Parliament because we want to be able to get this Brexit deal through. Because at the moment, we've got this extraordinary position where we've got the Conservatives, none of whom will talk tonight, by the way, but the Conservatives, yeah, all going on television saying, no, the prorogation, completely normal, nothing to see here, absolutely normal. But on the flip side, they're fighting to keep that prorogation, which they're claiming they didn't need for Brexit in the first place.
Yeah, I think it is a quite extraordinary situation. We saw this with Boris Johnson's statements in New York today as well. On the one hand, he's saying, and he has been saying for some time, this prorogation is simply about a new Queen's speech, a government setting out its bold new legislative agenda. It has nothing to do with Brexit and stymieing Parliament. But then on the other hand, now that we've had this adverse judgment from the court, we have statements being made by Boris Johnson and others that they will be undeterred in their pursuit of Brexit and delivering Brexit by the 31st of October. So you can't quite square that circle, I think.
I agree. When I heard Boris's reaction today about the fact that, you know, I'm looking forward to getting on with Brexit and all this kind of thing, I couldn't help but think, well, why are you even bringing up Brexit? Because you claimed all along that prorogation is nothing to do with Brexit. So, yeah, I'm glad you noticed that as well, because it seems like a strange position to take. Do you think that Boris, and again, I'm asking you this not as your opinion, as just your legal perspective, is there a legal reason now why Boris Johnson cannot continue as Prime Minister?
No, so there is no law, there's no legal duty on Boris Johnson to resign, and there's certainly nothing in the Supreme Court's judgment that refers to resignation. So that is, I think, at this point, a political matter for Boris Johnson, for the Conservative Party, as to whether he continues. I suspect that he wants to. He's in a sort of fighting spirit. This is sort of how he wants to approach things in quite a pugnacious way. So I don't imagine that he would want to resign. But I think it's a political matter. There's nothing in the law that requires him to do so.
And again, from a legal perspective, where would he stand if he took the decision to prorogue again?
So he'd have to be very careful, very, very careful. So if possible, the Supreme Court's judgment is about something that happened sort of in the past, as it were.
If he prorogued again, would it then have to be proven again in another High Court hearing, Supreme Court hearing, whatever, that it was once again unlawful? This ruling doesn't say now all prorogation is unlawful for X amount of time. It just refers to that particular prorogation.
That's right. It also lays down some legal principles, a test that a court will use in the future. But the way around it for Boris Johnson is, if he really does want to end this session and start a new one with a new Queen's speech, he could conceivably try to prorogue for just a few days, as is normally the case anyway, for just a few days, and then proceed from there. But you'll have to tread carefully, because if he tries to push this a little bit, tries to push for a longer prorogation, there will almost certainly be another legal challenge given this decision.
Asif Hamid, the lecturer in law at the University of Southampton, thank you for taking the time to talk to us this evening here on Talk Radio. We've got loads of calls, which we're going to get to in just a moment. Why is it that you're so angry? In your mind, what is the Supreme Court ruling? What has it actually got to do with Brexit? Are you now questioning our impartiality of our judges? What effect do you think all of this will have on your opinion about Brexit and our sovereignty and everything else going forward? We've got really good amount of time tonight for you and I to explore that. We're going to be doing just that right after this here on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic.
Join me, the Reverend Mike Graham. Revolutionary, rebellious, rebuilt, rebranded.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Tomorrow morning from 10.
On Talk Radio.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes. Yeah.
This is Talk Radio.
So, of course, we're talking about the debates. Good evening, it's Christo here, and we're talking about the big debate of today. And, of course, that is the Supreme Court ruling. Suspending Parliament was unlawful. Ian Lee is off tonight because we're giving you the chance to react, really, to what's been happening over the last 24 hours. And, of course, looking ahead to what you think should happen next. It looks like Parliament's reconvening tomorrow morning at 11:30. Obviously, Talk Radio will be the place for you to keep an eye on that. But I want to know from you this evening what it is that you're so angry about, what it is about this decision that has made you so angry, or indeed what it is about this decision that has made you so happy. Maybe you think this is the best decision ever, though even if you're in favour of the decision itself, it surely doesn't look good overall for our country, does it? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call to have your say. That's exactly what John did in Middlesbrough. Good evening to you, John.
Hi, mate. Thank you for making me call. Cheers.
That's quite all right. So, what do you make of all of this mess? The Supreme Court today has said that the Prime Minister of this country has acted in an unlawful way and has essentially broken the law, and the constitutional law anyway, and essentially as a result of that misled the monarch. I mean, he's only been in the job a few weeks. What do you make of all this, John?
Well, just to go back a few years, you've caught me at a brilliant time. I'm just walking off my local pub. you've caught me at a brilliant time. My problem is, I'm 23 years of age. My first time that I ever voted, put pencil to paper, was in 2016 under the referendum. I listened to both sides. I live in Middlesbrough, but I'm from Liverpool, so... But I listened to both sides of the argument, and I chose to vote Leave. Chose to vote Leave. 3 years later, it hasn't happened. I understand that. You know, there's people that have got different opinions. But 17.4 million people voted to Leave. My argument is this. How come the MPs that are in Parliament right now, they're not representing the people? 17.4 million people voted to leave the European Union. And it angers me so much. So I voted to leave, right? I voted to leave, but I was a Labour supporter. So in the 2017 general election, I'm from Liverpool. I cannot vote Tory. I can't do it. I cannot do it. I just can't do it. So I thought, you know what? I've got to vote Labour. I've got to vote Labour. So then I listened today, Corbyn. Blood. Oh my word. Oh, is Jesus real?
I don't know whether you're insulting Corbyn or Jesus there, but go on.
But I listened to Corbyn today. Bloody hell. Communism is alive, isn't it?
Hmm.
It must be alive. What? You know what I don't get?
Can I just go back to something that you said a moment ago? By the way, yeah. John, I really appreciate you calling, and thank you for being, you know, so honest about
how,
a few years ago that was your first vote. But
yeah.
I just want to put a different perspective to you, because,
yeah.
you know, if you've not listened to me before, I'm a passionate Remainer, though.
Are you?
Yeah,
but do you respect democracy, though?
Well, hang on. Let me
okay,
outline that, because I really actually object, John, to things like you disrespect democracy, or that, you know, you don't respect the will of the people, when you simply sort of try and exercise some caution in all this. So yes, I am a passionate Remainer. Yes, I am absolutely in absolutely bereft that we're actually leaving the EU, but we are, and actually I believe that we should, because at the end of the day, we've got to get it over and done with, and if we don't, or at least we don't at the very least have another referendum, which I'm sure is another conversation for another day, but if we don't if we don't at least try, we're never ever going to be able to put this to bed.
But
my point is, John, sorry, just let me say this and then I'll give
sorry,
you the floor.
But
all I'll say, so I think that should happen, but I am passionate that it's not done without a deal. I'm passionate that it's done in a managed way. Now, me saying that, John, does not make me someone who doesn't respect democracy, and it doesn't make me someone who doesn't respect 17.4 million people. I'm simply saying, can we respect their decision in a managed way? Go.
I politely disagree, because I listen to George Osborne and David Cameron. Outwardly say, they all said what leave means is leaving out of the customs union, leaving out of everything, leaving out of everything. They both of them said, the Remain campaign said that leave means leave. That's what they said. That's not what the Brexit party said. That's not, you know what?
Whenever any of those people said that, like David Cameron and George Osborne, everyone else that were on the leave side actually advocating the vote to leave said that what they were saying was Project Fear. The Vote Leave official leaflet, John, actually said that the exit from the EU will not be without a deal. It will be a managed exit from the EU. And every time someone like David Cameron or anyone like that went on television and said, no, look, no deal could happen, all those people shouted it down as Project Fear. So you can't now use their words to justify something that was said then that wouldn't happen. Go on.
Can I ask you a question? You're my fellow Englishman, I should say, yes?
Right.
Okay. So, do you honestly think, because I understand where you're coming from, but it's going to be a bad deal. That's like them turning around saying, like, you know what, you can leave, but we'll give you this really terrible deal, but you're going to have to pay all this money. But wouldn't you prefer to turn around and say, you know what, cut our losses, we're leaving no deal on the 31st of October, and on the 1st of November, then we'll trade with you.
Okay, John, do you mind me explaining something to you about that then? Because my real worry about all of this is that no deal and leaving without a deal is sort of bandied around like it's some sort of solution to everything.
We're not going to starve, old man.
No, 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 but John, just please let me say something to you, and then you can tell me, I think it's really dangerous that we sort of band around these things, because if we leave without a deal, of course we'll trade. Of course we'll trade, and as has been said by many people on the leave side, it will be under WTO terms, right? Now, the problem with that is, yes, of course, that gives us a mechanism by which to trade, but bearing in mind nearly half of our trade is done with the EU on a free trade basis at the moment.
Please let me finish,
John, right?
Go on.
Because that's how it's done. When we trade with them under WTO terms after no deal, a lot of the products that we produce here under those WTO terms, we would then have to put a tariff on when they go to the European Union, which means that when they manufacture cars here, they'll have to have a tariff on. When we sell them beef, they'll have to have a tariff on. Now, that's fine. That gives us a mechanism by which to trade. But of course, the European Union and all those countries, it's not our imports we need to worry about. It's what we're exporting, because we will become far less competitive, because the things that had no tariffs before would suddenly have tariffs on them. So, yes, we'd be out of the EU, but do you appreciate how that would have a massive effect on our ability to be competitive when cars would be more expensive that are produced here? Anything that is produced here that is going to the EU would become more expensive. Yeah, that is how WTO terms
So if we're out of all that, right? Just in layman's terms, right? Yeah. I'm just a working class guy, right?
I'm actually really enjoying this conversation, John, because we're not arguing with each other.
I'm learning a few things here, you know. But honestly, I just don't understand, right? What in a working class man's mind, and I think I'm speaking for a lot of guys here, a lot of men and women here, that are from just like, you know what, just leave. But I understand where you're coming from. But what I see, right, and what I hear from the EU, I hear these little snippets coming out of the EU saying, well, if anyone from the European Unions, if they say anything bad about the EU, they lose their pension. All these little things, and I go, that's a bit weird, isn't it?
And all I'll say, John, we've got to wrap it up, but all I'll say is just listen.
Great conversation. And I appreciate that, but also just
don't be taken in by people who are trying to tell you that this is easier than it actually is. Now, that's not to say your vote didn't mean anything. That's not to say your vote shouldn't be respected. And that's not to say that in some way, shape or form, we shouldn't leave. I'm just really worried that you're being told things by the Farages and the Daily Mails and whatever else of this world that are telling you that something's far easier and that WTO will be fine and you're not respecting democracy and the EU is this and that. And actually, it isn't as simple as we're making out, and we would have consequences as a result of no deal. Now, that's fine if you know about those consequences and you choose them, but I think that a lot of people, perhaps myself included, I don't know enough about this really, don't appreciate the gravity of all of this, and I just don't think it's unreasonable to say, look, can we just put the brakes on a second and see what we should do next? Suspending Parliament isn't the answer, and no deal isn't the answer, and let's just try and find a way forward. And perhaps if you've got an idea of how that can happen, 0344 499 1000. Really, really enjoyed talking to John. If you want to get on the radio yourself and tell us what you think, maybe you disagree with what you just heard, 0344 499 1000. Coming up next, we'll be talking to one of the architects, and I'm sure you've got something to say to this person, of this hearing and indeed the rebellion against the government that has taken no deal off the table. The MP Dominic Grieve will be joining us live on the line coming up next here on Talk Radio.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. This is Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Christo here on Talk Radio. A special programme tonight giving you the chance to analyse, to have your say, to be angry. I don't know what you want to do. I don't know what you want to say. I suppose this is your chance to do it. 0344 499 1000, about the events of today at the Supreme Court. They decided, they ruled that suspended Parliament was unlawful. All 11 judges unanimously. I think we're going down a very dangerous road if we start to question whether our judiciary, our capable of doing the job. I mean, it is their job to decide what is lawful and what is not. I can't say whether it's lawful. I can have an opinion, but I can't say for sure whether something's lawful, because that is what we have a Supreme Court for. So surely no one can really question the legality of what they have to say, can they? 0344-499-1000. We're meant to be talking to Dominic Grieve, but as I'm sure you'll appreciate, it's a busy night for everyone, so we're having a bit of trouble getting through to him at the moment. But as soon as we do, we'll cross live to him. But in the meantime, still getting through your calls to tell me your opinion, your reaction, what you think should happen next. Let's go to Hampshire and talk to Joe. Good evening to you, Joe.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Joe, you there? Yes, I can, just about. What would you like to say about today's Supreme Court hearing, that the Prime Minister acted in an unlawful way? What do you make of that?
Well, as a 24-year-old sort of disillusioned millennial, if you like, at the moment, I completely agree that it's the right decision. It is an issue of credibility and holding people to account. What I don't believe is that this decision will actually lead to any real anything moving forward. It won't mean that this runs and leads a precedent and have a massive political impact. I think you're holding the man to account who needs to be to stop things sliding. I don't believe that a no deal will give us a good result. I also don't believe that a deal with the EU will give us the result that we want. And I think we've been misled. It's almost like the rosy, perfect, rose-tinted view of, well, if perfect communism and perfect socialism in theory were there, we'd all be leading rosy, happy lives. But in practice, it doesn't work like that.
I happen to agree with you, Joe, but there is the argument to say, I mean, I agree that what was an incredibly complicated decision, an incredibly complicated process, was sold to the electorate as a simple in or out, yes or no, leave or remain. And it was really not as simple as that, as we have seen in the last 3.5 years. And I think that Parliament and MPs have been in an almost impossible situation. Do I think they've all acted brilliantly? No, but I think they've almost been in an impossible situation between trying to respect the vote of the referendum whilst also trying to maintain the national interest. And the national interest is that we leave in a managed way. We don't leave without a deal. However, having said all of that, you, Joe, must understand that people who voted to leave, whether it was a complicated process or not, whether it was more difficult than we thought or not, whether it was managed or not, people who voted leave, their vote needs to be respected.
I agree with you on that point completely. I actually voted leave myself, but on a completely sit on the fence, flip a coin, sort of last minute, just go with the flow decision.
Why?
Which...
Why? What popped into your head? Because I actually was really similar, even though I'm quite passionate about Remain. I'm a Remainer who thinks we should just leave in a managed way, so I don't know what that makes me. But I, prior to the actual referendum, I didn't know really much about it. I was just listening to what both sides had to say, and I hovered over the box for a while going, And then I went for the safe, what I saw as the safe option, and I believed that the economic problems that we would have as a result of leaving would come true, so I voted the safe option to remain, or what I saw as the safe option. What was it that popped into your head when you had that pen over that box that decided leave was the one for you?
Well, actually, I think about a week later, I regretted the decision and wish I'd gone the other way, but, I mean, it is neither here nor there now, but I think the last thing that really hit me to leave box is the control of our own market and our own economy and that sovereignty. But realistically, with everything that was going on both sides of the media and both sides of sort of campaigns of Brexit and stay and both things, it completely confused things to the point that it was that last minute, okay, I heard that yesterday, therefore that's going to sway me.
Okay, Joe, listen, lovely to talk to you. We've got to leave it there because, as I said, one of the architects of the rebellion against the government is the former Conservative MP, now independent for Beaconsfield, Dominic Grieve, who joins us live on the line. Good evening to you, Dominic.
Good evening.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us here on Talk Radio. I presume that this was a judgment you were expecting and possibly happy about.
I certainly thought it was likely. Once the case started to unfold, it seemed to me that the government had no sustainable position to justify their approach to what they'd done, failed to submit evidence in justification. It was abundantly clear that the explanations given by the Prime Minister for proroguing Parliament were in fact bogus and untrue, and I thought at that stage that the court would find as it did. The fact that all 11 judges of the court took the same view shows, I think, obviously that they were of a like mind, but also shows how clear-cut the issues, in fact, were.
What would you like to see happen next?
I would like the Prime Minister to stop behaving like a vandal in a china shop and going around smashing the crockery as he tries to achieve either the deal he says he believes he wants, but nobody seems to think he's even started negotiating or is likely to get, or worse, trying to take us out with no deal on the 31st of October against the clear majority wish of the House of Commons. Now, I recognise that we have a national political crisis, that we're a very divided country on the issue of Brexit, and I also recognise that we had a referendum in 2016 where a majority said they wanted to leave, although the form of leaving put forward by the leavers then bears no relationship to what the government is trying to do with a no-deal Brexit today. My view is that the only way out of this hole which we've dug for ourselves is to go back to the public and offer them the choices which are available. Some of those are not choices I would like to follow, but nevertheless to offer them in a referendum, and then we can put in the necessary law to make sure that they are implemented immediately, the decision is implemented afterwards.
What would you put on that ballot paper? Would it be Remain versus No Deal, Remain versus...
I'd put the three choices which I think are available, which are Remain, no leaving without any agreement at all, which I believe to be catastrophic, but I recognise that there are a significant number of people in the country who seem to think it's a good idea, and leaving with the deal negotiated by the Prime Minister. There is a deal available negotiated by the last Prime Minister. It may be varied by the present one. You'd have to be done on an alternative vote system on the basis that you have a second choice, because one of the choices will drop out at some point. And that, I think, is probably the best way of resolving it. The alternative is that we can go round in circles for months.
But what would you say? Because Dominic, I have to say, I broadly, as probably one of the few Remainers left in broadcast opinion-based radio, I actually happen to agree with you. However, a lot of people, and I understand it, and we get calls after calls from people, and I'm sure I don't need to tell you, Dominic, actually, how angry people are and how people feel like that sounds like, whatever your good intentions might be, look, it's just another Ramona, an elite, trying to stilt democracy. We had a referendum. Why the hell do we need another one?
Because there is no way of implementing the 2016 referendum result, unless you take the view that we should crash out without any agreement at all on the 31st of October. Or rather, some people demand that I should do that. And I have to say, as it was not even floated by leavers in the 2016 referendum, and I believe it would be probably the end of the United Kingdom as we know it, I will not let it happen. That's the basic answer.
But I realise that makes some people upset and angry,
but it is such a disastrous proposal that people shouldn't be surprised if a very large number of people find it unacceptable.
But a lot of people voted, or at least the majority government was voted for in the 2017 election on a manifesto that stated, no deal, better than a bad deal. So again, a lot of people who, when we make this point to them, or when I do, when I say to them, look, you know what? Absolutely right. The goalposts have completely changed. You were sold something that was completely doesn't bear any relevance to where we are today. And the very people who warned of no deal, David Cameron and the others, were shouted down as Project Fear. Now their words are being used in the most audacious way by leavers as justification for a situation they said would never happen all along. So I absolutely share those frustrations, but the fact still remains that people voted on a manifesto that said no deal better than a bad deal, so surely no deal has to be the default.
I appreciate that point, but I think you actually need to look at the manifesto in its totality. Most of the page devoted to Brexit insisted that the Prime Minister Theresa May, and she said this in good faith, was going to negotiate a deal which would take us out in an orderly way. And in addition to that, she said that she wanted to be absolutely clear that we would know where we were going on the date of our departure, so we wouldn't move into a limbo, a sort of halfway house where we hadn't negotiated the future. And that simply hasn't happened. I agree, I was a bit startled when I read in the manifesto the expression, no deal is better than a bad deal, because it certainly had never been my view. I wasn't consulted, and when I was asked on the hustings during the during that election, my view as to no deal Brexit, I said I thought it was crazy, which it is. So it should never have gone in. But I accept that it was put in on that page, and it's incompatible with what is said in the two paragraphs below. But the fact of the matter is, I'm afraid this isn't the first time in history that manifestos have contained material that shouldn't be in it. I, as the candidate in that election, stood in good faith on the manifesto and indeed indicated that if she could achieve the deal that she set out in that manifesto, I would support it. We've never come anywhere close to achieving such a deal.
And what would you say to all those people now? And there are a significant amount, a worrying amount. I mean, it's unbelievable to me, the number out there, who now want no deal. A lot of people are saying now it's undemocratic to block no deal. Dominic, those are people who will be voting for you. They're people who are disillusioned. There are people who are angry. What would you say to those people now to convince them that what you're doing isn't some sort of establishment backlash? It's actually acting in their interests.
I have to be honest with them. I am seeking to act in their interests because my own judgment as a member of parliament, and I have to exercise my judgment and my conscience, is that leaving the EU without an agreement is going to do terrible things to our country.
Tell us what. Remind us again, because I think a lot of people don't believe that. So tell us what it will actually do.
Let's just run through it very briefly. Firstly, it is going to be massively disruptive in the short to medium term, because the introductions of regulations and tariffs immediately on the 31st of October at 11 p.m. is going to mean that our trade is held up in a way that will have a direct impact on people's well-being, whether it's medicines, drugs, the availability of fresh food, automotive parts, which will have a potentially hugely damaging effect on our manufacturing industry, and indeed many other supply chains. So that's the first thing it will do. It will also have, in that temporary period, it may not be temporary, it could go on for some time, a devastating impact on our national security, because we will be excluded from the databases that we share with our European partners to provide for our protection. So that's the immediate short-term consequence. Beyond that is the fact that the idea that this is some momentary bump in the road is rubbish, because what's going to happen immediately afterwards is the government is going to have to struggle very quickly to get a trade deal with the EU, because the EU is our biggest trading partner, and without a trade deal, our trade with the EU will start to reduce, and because we are dependent on it for so many aspects of our national wealth and wealth creation and generation, it will cause us a great deal of economic damage that will reduce the government's tax take, which will mean that unless the government taxes us more, there will be less money to spend on public services which people want. And meantime, the alienation which we're going to create with our European partners is going to directly endanger our national security. And finally, because this outcome is particularly resented in Northern Ireland and Scotland, it threatens the breakup of the United Kingdom. And I'm a unionist politician. And under no circumstances am I going to sign up to such an outcome.
You know what the problem is, though, and this is the really big problem in this debate, people don't believe you. I mean, I could say that till I'm blue in the face, you could say that till you're blue in the face, but people don't believe you. How are you going to, you and other MPs, going to get through to people when you make these warnings and you make these statements? How are you going to make them believe you going forward? Because there's a massive number of people in this country who are going to have listened to that, and they're going to be saying to themselves, and they're going to be texting in now saying, a Ramona saying Project Fear.
Just consider it this way. I sometimes get emails, and I get quite a bit, apart from the death threats, I get quite a lot of emails saying you're only acting in your own narrow self-interest. Well, I've been in Parliament now for 22 years. I've been a Conservative MP. I've held ministerial office. I've no particular desire to have an unpleasant life. And yet I've chosen, because I happen to think this is really important, to end up in a situation where I get the whip withdrawn by my party. If we have a general election, the chances are I won't be re-elected because I'll have to stand as an independent. And I'm prepared to sacrifice my career because I happen to believe that what I'm saying is correct. Now, they may still disagree with me, but I can assure them that is my true belief, not some con trick I'm perpetrating on them. And they need to ask themselves this question. When people are angry, it clouds your judgment. And particularly if people think that they're being ignored, or, and I do understand this, if they get proud about something and they think they're being pushed around, for example, by foreigners. But this simply isn't the case. The dreadful truth is that the Brexit project is deeply flawed. Unless you're prepared to accept a revolutionary upheaval in our country's affairs, leaving the EU on any objective analysis is a very stupid thing to do, and it has virtually no benefits to it. I can only really think of one benefit, and I think it's so insubstantial in practice, which is the recovery of our national fisheries, that it is monetarily worth very little, even if symbolically it matters to people. And we are about to do ourselves a great deal of damage, and it will affect particularly the most vulnerable. Wealthy people, well, they can always play around with their money and do whatever they like, or move things abroad, or do whatever suits them. Vulnerable people will be the ones who will suffer the most. And that's why, if people really want to do this, and I understand that there will still be people, despite who don't accept what I'm saying, who really want to do this, all I'm saying is please go back to the polling station on a day as quickly as possible, we'll try to organise it, and confirm that that's what you want to do. And if you do confirm that that's what you want to do, I'll never raise the subject again.
I think that we would appreciate that, not from you, but from any of us, not having to talk about any of this again. Dominic Grieve, MP, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this evening. Really want to know your reaction to that. We'll get down to some of the detail of what Dominic Grieve had to say there in just a moment, and more of your reaction to today's events. That's all coming up.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening to you. It's 7 minutes past 11. Thanks so much for your company. It's a special programme tonight with me, Christo, giving you the chance to have your say about the events of the Supreme Court today, what you think should happen going forward, whether you think the only solution now is a second referendum, whether you think the only solution now is, well, who knows? You tell me. 03444991000. Should Boris Johnson resign? We've been talking about that. We've been talking about the language of the Supreme Court, which is pretty unprecedented as well. The kinds of words that they used, void, unlawful, with no effect, misled, all of these kinds of words essentially saying that Boris Johnson broke the law. Before we get back to some of your calls on this, it might be quite nice to actually hear what Boris Johnson had to say in reaction to today's ruling. As we said, the ruling today said that his decision to suspend Parliament was unlawful, according to the Supreme Court. Let's hear Boris's reaction to what Lady Hale had to say.
I say I strongly disagree with this decision of the Supreme Court. I have the utmost respect for our judiciary. I don't think this was the right decision. I think that the prerogative of prorogation has been used for centuries without this kind of challenge. It's perfectly usual to have a Queen's speech. That's what we want to do. But more importantly, let's be in no doubt, there are a lot of people who want to frustrate Brexit. There are a lot of people who basically want to stop this country coming out of the EU. And we have a parliament that is unable to be prorogued, unable to, doesn't want to have an election. And I think it's time we took things forward.
So that's what Boris Johnson had to say. People want to frustrate Brexit. Where on earth would he bring up the people that want to frustrate Brexit if he's claiming the prorogation had nothing to do with Brexit? Seems an odd thing for him to want to mention. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call to have your say. Callum is in Caerphilly. Hi there, Callum. Oh, are you there? Sorry, wrong fader. I'll do my phone faders, so I'm just telling the knobs and buttons person that. Hi there, Callum, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
Fine, thank you. So the Supreme Court said that suspending Parliament was unlawful. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think whether or not anything is technically unlawful or not, it's kind of gone out the window in the last few years, to be honest. I think everyone's just kind of playing the Constitution by ear, as far as I could see it. I mean, we have the most biased Speaker in the House of Commons that's ever been. You know, it seems to be that from day to day, what's seen as acceptable interference with our rule of law. I mean, I think Peter Hitchens called the Supreme Court ruling today as US-style Supreme Court political activism without the rigorous system.
Do you believe that, or are you just sort of telling us what you think that they said? Do you actually believe that that's what's happened, that they're playing politics, the Supreme Court?
Well, I am aware of several of the judges. Well, I've seen advertisements for several of the judges. I'll give you an example. I work in law enforcement at the moment. Quite a lot of what I enforce are European
standards. Sorry, just to absolutely clarify though, you think all 11 judges are potentially biased in favour of remaining in the EU?
Yes.
All 11?
Well, whether or not all 11 are completely politically biased, don't know. But I certainly think, from what I've seen, that several of them would have stated that this was illegal, regardless of which way it goes.
So that means that you literally have you don't think our judiciary is impartial anymore. You don't think our judges, you don't think our courts of law are impartial.
I don't think, with regard to Brexit,
that's really, really serious stuff that you're saying there. You're actually saying that you believe that our judiciary, this isn't politicians who you might think are dishonourable, because, you know, a lot of people might say that that is the case, but you're suggesting actually that our judiciary, our judges, our highest court in the land is actually biased and had a predetermined idea of what they were going to rule before they'd even heard any evidence.
Well, the Constitutional Reform Act back in 2005 was actually designed to split the Supreme Court from the actual House of Lords and the House of Commons. So let's not state that the rule of law has always been interpreted in a manner that could be deemed completely, you know, in line with the Dicean principles in which it was founded, you know, separation of powers. To state, I don't think any impartiality still exists after Brexit. We are a binary country. You either vote, you're a Remain voter or you're a Leave voter.
I would exercise caution with that, though, because I think that I get what you're saying, and I think everyone's got an opinion on Brexit, but the entire point of our judiciary, isn't it, that we have faith that they can set those opinions aside. In fact, Lady Hale, do you know what, actually, Callum, while we've got you on the phone, let's remind ourselves of what Lady Hale said on day one of the hearing. I really want you to hear this, so listen carefully to this, Callum. This is Lady Hale, who delivered the verdict today. This is what she had to say on the first day.
We have before us two appeals, one from England and Wales and one from Scotland. They both involve the same issue, whether it was lawful for the Prime Minister to advise Her Majesty to authorise the prorogation of Parliament. It is important to emphasise that we are not concerned with the wider political issues which form the context for this legal issue. The determination of this legal issue will not determine when and how the United Kingdom leaves the European Union.
So you just heard the words there, Callum, of Lady Hale on day one, saying it's absolutely nothing to do with Brexit. This is just about the legality of the prorogation of Parliament. You think she's not telling the truth?
So when John Bercow basically states that his role as Speaker is to ensure the position of the House and the utility of the House of Commons to be able to speak in relation to all issues and openly discuss all issues, do you believe he makes that statement because he actually believes that, or do you believe he makes that statement because he believes that and he knows by keeping the House in session that we can't go to a no-deal Brexit?
No, but John Bercow isn't a judge on the Supreme Court. I would be more inclined on issues of what is legal and what is not. I might have an opinion on whether I agree with the judgment. I might have an opinion on whether I think that they've said or done the right thing. But when it comes to the actual legality, when it comes to the mechanics of what is legal and what isn't, no, I don't believe I know more than a judge on the Supreme Court. I really don't believe I know that. And I take now, John Bercow is not a judge on the Supreme Court. John Bercow is an MP. And yes, of course, MPs, it's kind of their job not to be impartial, actually, although it is his. But Lady Hale, absolutely, I believe that she's impartial. I believe her when she says, as a judge on the Supreme Court, that actually it has nothing to do with Brexit. It has to do with the legality of the prorogation. But can you answer my question, Callum? You heard what Lady Hale had to say there. Are you genuinely saying you don't believe her there?
I don't know each judge individually, right? I can't give.
Well, she's one of the 11, and she was the one that set out sort of on day one. I think she was very worried, clearly, that whatever result they came up with, there would always be the accusation. If they came up with Boris Johnson hadn't been unlawful, they were probably going to have a barrage of people saying you're pro-leave, and vice versa. So that's why she set out her stall on that. So she's one of the 11, and obviously you believe all of the 11 aren't being particularly honest and have some bias.
No, I'm not saying all 11 are biased. I'm saying that.
Oh, okay, you did a second ago. That's all, Callum.
I'm saying that I'm not saying they all are making this verdict because a Remain verdict, right? That they all want a verdict that supports whatever the agenda is to get, a second referendum or something along those lines. I'm making the point that I knew before that no matter what certain members of this panel of judges were actually going to come up with our verdict, regardless what the legal position was on it.
Well, that's bias. I mean, you're saying that they were biased beforehand. If they were going to come up with that verdict without even any of the evidence, what you're saying is that you believe that at least some, maybe not all, but at least some of the judges Supreme Court are biased. And did you vote leave or remain, Callum?
I don't know what that has to do with the argument.
Well, I'm just interested as to which side you went on, because if you voted leave, I just have another question for you about that.
I did vote leave, yes.
Okay, because what I'm a bit confused by about the leave voters who are saying that this is in some way judges being biased, why did you vote leave, Callum?
I voted leave. I could give you a number of reasons.
Would you give me a few of them?
Well, back in 2016, I'd vote leave today for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But back in 2016, I was a Labour member, former Socialist Party member, supporting Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn always talked about how he was a neoliberal institution, mm-hmm. things like Article 7, of the mixed constitution that basically you can't have interference. You have things like the railways directive, which is basically like a legal quagmire that stops the renationalisation of the railways.
Hmm.
It's things like the European arrest warrant, which basically because of the standing of European legislation in relation to our own means that basically high level witness protection can never actually be enacted, because at any point
another member state could actually, utilize the arrest warrant to bypass our own witness protection. From that, mass immigration, the way the European Court of Justice overrules our own rule of law.
Okay, so well, that's an interesting one, Callum, because you talk about our rule of law. Well, you've just spoken a moment ago about how you now think our rule of law is biased. So what is it that you actually want? Because you don't want, and this is what I find a bit confusing about those people who voted Leave that think today's judgment was in some way biased, because a lot of people who voted Leave voted to do so that our judges and our courts and our judicial system is 100% sovereign. Well, now a lot of those very same voters are saying that they believe that system is biased. So if you think that the EU is biased and you don't want to be there because they have control, and then you think our UK judges are biased, to me that looks like maybe the problem isn't with the people in the courts, but maybe
I know what you're getting at.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I really want the UK to be sovereign and us to be in charge, and then on the same breath say, however, our judges are biased.
No, I don't want the UK to be in charge. I want the separation of powers as enshrined in the Dicean principles that make up our constitution.
Yeah, but you want the UK to be sovereign in their own laws. Yes.
I don't want the laws that can only be proposed by the Commission, regardless of if they have to go through the European Parliament, to bind UK judges, Parliament and government, because that imposes on the separation of powers.
Right. But with respect, Callum, perhaps if the European Union was imposing on judges, then if those judges were biased, they wouldn't have a choice.
They don't have a choice in regards to certain legislative matters.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good if they're biased, isn't it, Callum?
You mean?
I'm just trying to point out that I think in a lot of these arguments there are contradictions and we can't all have it each way. But Callum, look, I know I'm pulling your leg a little bit.
I know you're picking up a red.
But I think it's a fair fair contradiction to make, and I'm not trying to sort of catch you out or anything, Callum, but I think it's a really important contradiction that people make, is that we can't on the one hand say that we believe our judiciary in the UK is biased, but on the flip side say, well, actually though, we want that UK judiciary to look over everything and be in charge when we leave the EU. I think that's quite a dangerous contradiction for us to put out there. The difference is
So in this country, we have the supremacy of Parliament is one of the key founding Dicean principles, and then we have the separation of powers between the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative. So Parliament, the judiciary, and the government. The problem with the way the European system is put into place is that the Commission basically actually proposes all the legislation. And it doesn't matter how many times it goes to the Parliament.
Not all the legislation. I think they do some of it. I don't think they do absolutely all of it, because some of it also comes from the Council and some comes from the Council of Ministers, and they also can dissect whatever the Commission has come up with and bat it back to them if they don't think it's any good. So it's not just as cut and dried that the Commission sort of come up with something and it's suddenly the rule of law. I think that's really important
You're misinterpreting what I'm saying. But the legislation always originates from, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily. Legislation originates in the UK from lobby groups, for instance. Well,
allow me to clarify what I'm saying.
Yeah, go on.
Is there a facility for any other body within the European structure, apart from the Commission, to enable the redaction of certain legislation that's already been put into place by the Parliament? The answer is no.
No, but the Parliament... Go on.
The answer is no. You can't.
The Parliament, Callum, would have voted through that legislation, so therefore it would have been democratically... But again, the Commission can't just introduce legislation that immediately becomes law. It has to go through the European Parliament. It has to be dissected by the Council and the Council of Ministers, both of which are elected, as is the European Parliament. So yes, it might originate from an unelected body, as does much of the legislation here in the UK, but... It doesn't necessarily mean that it suddenly just becomes law. It does have to go through a legislative democratic process. But I get what you're saying. you know, it's still frustrating and it's still not sort of European, it's not UK people who are deciding it, it's European commissioners. And I understand what you're saying, with that, and I respect what you have to say there. Thank you very much indeed. We will come back in just a couple of, moments here on Talk Radio, because we're going to be talking to the former Minister for Europe and author of the book Brexit No Exit. Dennis McShane will be with us in just a moment here on Talk Radio.
No nonsense discussion.
It's Speech Radio, Jim.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening to you. It's Christo here on Talk Radio. We're giving you the chance to react in any way you wish to today's Supreme Court ruling. It's a special program. And of course, we're looking ahead to what's going to be happening tomorrow in Parliament, because, hey, Parliament's back. It's going to be back 11:30 tomorrow morning. And of course, that's happening because 11 Supreme Court judges ruled that the proroguing of Parliament was void and unlawful. So that's what was ruled today. Though some of you don't believe the judiciary. They believe that you believe the judiciary is biased. And I think that's a very, very, very dangerous road for us to be going down. I think that, you know, within reason, you should be able to tear apart an MP's argument right, left and centre. But when it comes to the rule of law, I'm inclined to believe judges and that they are not biased. And I mean, you're not going to believe me now, are you? But I would be saying that whatever they said, you'd have to accept what they said, whichever way it went today. But of course, I know you're angry. I know some of you are furious. I know some of you are thrilled. Whatever your emotion, your feeling, and whatever you think should happen next, 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Now, Dennis McShane is the former Minister for Europe and author of the book Brexit No Exit: Why in the End Britain Won't Leave Europe. He joins me live on the line. Good evening to you.
Good evening. There's a tiny correction. That book was published about 2 years ago. I've got one that's literally printed now in bookshops soon on Amazon in the next 2 or 3 days called Brexiternity. The idea of Brexit is going to be an eternity. Whatever happens, deal, no deal.
So have you changed from us not leaving to it now just going on in limbo ad infinitum?
Well, I personally, I've got my own views, but really I'm past that now. I mean, Brexit is just sapping the kind of core juices out of Britain, isn't it?
Well, it is, but there are a lot of people who believe that the reason that that's happening, I'm not one of them, but a lot of people believe that the reason that that's happening is because MPs have not been doing their job, and it's a Remainer conspiracy to keep Britain in the EU. If Remainers make it as difficult as possible and tie everyone in knots, eventually we're all going to tire of it, and by some mechanism, we'll end up staying in. What do you say to that?
I don't think that's the case at all. Brexit was voted over 3 years ago, a decision. Just put some figures around it. 17.4 million people voted for Brexit, but there were 52 million voting age citizens in June 2016. So that means, I think my mental arithmetic is still okay, even at this time of night, that 34.6 million people did not vote for Brexit.
But isn't there an argument to say they should have got off their backsides and gone and voted? Because a lot of people get annoyed with those sorts of, you know.
No, you're absolutely right, Chris. Look, I've been in enough elections. You respect the rules of elections. You don't vote. You've got no say. Nonetheless, that's sort of 34.6 million of our fellow citizens who've been kind of left out of this, and the only people who count were about one-third of the voting age electorate. Now, I'm not going to get into that debate. One of the problems really is this, that people who voted back then, 3.5 years ago, they weren't told what leave meant. They weren't told it might mean the Japanese car companies leaving, or, you know, 50-mile queues to go through Dover and Calais. And there were so many variations of Brexit. But the only one on offer from Mrs. May and now from Mr. Johnson is the hardest of hard Brexits. So that's a problem MPs face. They have to represent their constituents who want, you know, a bit of Brexit, control on immigration or something, but certainly want to keep retiring to Spain or France, to warmer bits of Europe, and they don't understand why they can't have both.
But do you not see that a lot of people now will simply say, well, I tell you the way we're going to fulfill all of that is that we simply leave with no deal. The number of people I speak to on Twitter, the number of people that call this radio station who want us to leave with no deal, who want us to go on to WTO terms. I mean, I've never known a situation like it where a country actually wants to impose that on themselves. But the problem is, Mr. McShane, no one believes you. We just had Dominic Grieve on earlier, and I'm still getting tweets where it was very articulately spelled out the consequences of no deal. But the problem is, you know, former MPs like yourself, MPs like Dominic Grieve, people just don't believe you guys anymore.
Look, I can accept that. I started my life in BBC local radio. I did late night phone-ins, and this, I'm talking about the 1970s, and all I ever heard were Enoch Powell reflected back to me about repatriation of immigrants, and we let all the Asians and the Africans in. I know what people feel like, but you actually have to look at, we've had three elections since 2016. 2017, Mrs. May offered hard Brexit, and she lost 30-odd seats in her majority. 2018, we had local government elections, less important, but the Lib Dems cleaned up. And then the European Parliament election this summer, and again, the Conservatives did very badly. So I don't know. All the opinion polls say something different. Not that they're suddenly in love with Europe. Nobody is. But they're very, very reluctant to say that it would be a great thing for Britain if the Japanese auto firm, car firms close up, go home, if our farmers can't export their lamb to Germany, and if people can't go and retire in Spain. So it's a real muddle, isn't it?
What do you think should happen next? Whether it be Boris resigning, whether it be a referendum, confirmatory? I mean, Labour, what their position is on Europe, I mean, it changes daily.
Oh, Chris, I was at the Labour Party conference yesterday on Sunday, and it was frankly was embarrassing. I mean, I've been going to Labour Party conference for I don't want to say how many years. I've never seen such a shambles as the debate and vote yesterday on the issue of Remain and referendum. I mean, the sad thing is that 2 weeks ago, the opposition parties had a pretty good front to say to Mr. Johnson, look, you can't take us over the cliff edge of a no deal. You've got to ask the European Union for an extension. Bingo, they passed an emergency law. And when he said, no, I want an opposition, I want an election tomorrow, they said, no, if you can't get a majority for it from you in the Commons, you can't have it. Stop being a child.
But now,
all that's been blown apart, first of all, by the Lib Dems saying we're not interested in a referendum, we're going to revoke, and then Jeremy Corbyn, I don't know frankly what his position is. So the opposition really has let the country down just as much as both Mrs. May and now Boris Johnson.
But the problem is, though, that there is a real disconnect, or there is the perception of a disconnect between what's happening in Parliament and what's happening in the rest of the country. Many, many more constituencies voted Leave than Remain. Many MPs are representing Leave constituencies, and they see that not voting in favour of no deal or stopping no deal being able to happen, that is betraying the result of the referendum. Now, how are we ever going to square the circle of MPs who believe they're acting in the national interest by stopping no deal, who are being accused of being conspirators, saboteurs, remainers, and all of that? Because, I mean, it's really serious that people feel really disconnected from the Parliament.
Well, I think the loss of support for Parliament over the last 20 years, you're absolutely right, has been very, very serious. The job traditionally of an MP is not to say, go into the pubs. When I started in politics, almost every pub I went into in working class areas of Birmingham, they wanted the restoration of hanging and the repatriation of Pakistani immigrants. And I said, no, I can't support that. And today, I'm not an MP anymore, thank goodness, but if I represented Sunderland, which voted Leave, you're absolutely right, I'm not going to say to my constituents, were I a Sunderland MP, yes, I want Nissan to close up and go home, as the Japanese ambassador keeps saying. And it's always that problem for any MP between the passions of the moment, the anger of the moment, and the actual interests of in the medium and long term of his constituents. There's no easy answer to it. I mean, the real answer is it's possible, is there are two answers. One, that Boris Johnson, and I've known Boris, I mean, I've written articles for The Spectator when he edited it, I'm not some anti-Johnson figure, that compromise, the Tory value of the middle way. Mrs. May took incredibly bad advice and went down a very hard Brexit road, even with her deal. Alternatively, trust the people. That was the Tory slogan for 200 years, trust the people. It's more than nearly 4 years since we had the referendum. We know so many new facts, so many new issues. I agree that the powerful voices out there, but there's also that silent majority of 34.6 million people who've been ignored since June 2016. I don't know which way they go, Chris. I mean, they might say we want the most abrupt total. We don't care about all the foreign companies leaving. We don't care
And I honestly think that's where people are. And I think it's kind of staggering. I mean, I've never known a situation, and I'm sure you haven't where a country would... Where a country has so little faith in the information that they're being given that they are prepared to take a risk that all of that information is completely wrong regarding what would be the consequences of no deal. And of course, that's how we've ended up in this mess, because Parliament wouldn't have been prorogued. I think we can all agree on that, had it not been to try and stop the no deal legislation. I've never known a situation where people have so little faith in their elected representatives that they would actually take the risk of the catastrophe of no deal, because they and all the results of that and all the implications of that, they're saying bring it on. They are. People on here are saying it.
Chris, I'm sure they are, you know, if you're hosting talk radio, and I don't want to go back to my years as a sort of juvenile, you know, everyone is so much more professional now than when
Dennis, you can come and do work experience here any time you like.
What I would say is trust the people. I think you may be surprised that if the British people were asked again, do you want that total amputation? Do you want all, you know, a million Brits living overseas who are going to lose all their health care insurance to be repatriated to Britain? Or is there a compromise way out there? It's the compromise we should be looking for. Theresa May refused that. I don't think Jeremy Corbyn quite knows what he wants. And Boris Johnson so far is refusing it.
Sorry, Dennis, the problem with compromise, and I think, I broadly agree that actually... some middle ground would be wonderful on this. But the problem with compromise is that you do have the more extreme voices on the Leave side who will immediately say it is a... Well, you saw a surrender bill. That was what was said about the withdrawal agreement.
Traitors.
If you're suggesting that there's actually a softer Brexit...
Look, Chris, I know Nigel Farage. I mean, I hate to say it. We've always got on quite well personally. I can do the Nigel Farage phone in for an hour on LBC or on talk radio every day for the next month, saying exactly what he will say. But these are one of those fundamental questions we have to face. 20 years, we had the Nigel Farages at the beginning of the last century saying votes for women were a disgrace, a scandal, and shouldn't happen. Ireland shouldn't be allowed to be an independent country. I mean, that is what the Nigel Farages of 100 years ago were saying. So, of course, that's what happens when you face a huge existential question. I may be completely wrong. Maybe the British people want this total amputation, this axing, no more living and retiring abroad, and the rest of it. In that case, I'll have to live with that. I don't believe that, and I think after sort of nearly 4 years of fussing about with so many new facts, so little leadership from all of our political leaders and the press, maybe the time has come to trust the people.
All right. Dennis McShane, really good to talk to you. And Dennis McShane's new book is called
Brexiternity.
Brexiternity.
Thank you.
And that offer of work experience is absolutely there for you, Dennis.
I
just like a strong cup of tea with a big dash of milk in it. Dennis McShane, thank you very much indeed. You see, we can have a bit of a laugh, can't we? Even though it's really, really grim times and we all can't stand each other and we're divided down the middle and it's absolutely grim and terrible. 0344 499 1000. I mean, you've heard from Dominic Grieve there a little earlier. You've heard from Dennis McShane just then. That's two Remain, one former MP, one sitting MP, who are on the Remain side, who are telling you what the implications will be of a no-deal Brexit. And that's obviously where we were, what got us into this mess, because it was the desire for Boris Johnson. And I think, can't we all just say that this is the case? It was the desire to try and get rid of the legislation or stop the legislation to stop no-deal Brexit that made him want to prorogue Parliament. I mean, that's pretty much a given, isn't it? Do we all not just think that that's true, whatever side of the debate you're on? And many people, of course, supported Boris Johnson doing that, especially those on the Leave side. Now you've heard all of the implications once again of no deal, and you've heard the reasons why the people who are trying to stop no deal have done so. Is there any part of you convinced that no deal would still be a bad idea? I mean, some of you are absolutely just absolutely still furious. I had this tweet. Where is the tweet I had from someone? I think I've just lost it now. But it was someone who was basically saying, can't believe this. It's just completely, it's completely Project Fear once again, and all of this kind of stuff. And to be honest, I don't think that that's absolutely the case. I mean, there are actual facts that would tell us that it's going to be a bit of a problem. No, it's not that one. It wasn't Dougal. It was another one where he basically said something along the lines of, just be listening to Dominic Grieve, never heard such, you know, absolute rubbish on it. And I can't remember what it was, actually. I'm just going to try and fight. I hate it when you lose a tweet and you've got a really good one. It's really annoying. I think you've, have you deleted any tweets? Maybe they deleted it themselves. Maybe they've changed their mind. Maybe they're a Remainer now. Amazing. 0344 499 1000. Quite seriously, is it still no deal for you, despite all of the consequences? I really want to know whether that's the case. And of course, more of your reaction to what the Supreme Court had to say. Coming up after the break, we have a talk radio favourite is going to be coming on. And we've never sparred on the radio before. Myself and Andre Walker will be talking, and that's all coming up here on Talk Radio.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Christo this evening, and Ian Lee is going to be back later in the week. It's a special programme because, of course, we are talking and giving you the chance to give your opinion on what happened in the Supreme Court today, as well as all the other elements of the Brexit debate that got us here, really, because of course it is about the no deal and the trying to prevent the no deal legislation that got us into this mess, even though bizarrely Boris Johnson and all the other Conservative MPs denied that all along, though still fought the Supreme Court over it and claimed it was nothing to do with Brexit, even though he then referenced Brexit when he was asked about the ruling today. So it's all a little bit confusing, if you ask me. But then I suppose we're in very confusing times, aren't we? And of course, all of this about us trying to stop the no deal legislation, or indeed Boris Johnson trying to stop that no deal legislation and the rebellion of MPs that we saw a few weeks ago. And of course, many of you are still in favour of no deal. Many of you are still furious that that law still stands. And actually, when we were expressing what might happen as a result of no deal earlier, I found the tweet I was talking about. It was Lee saying, I've never heard such a load of in all my life, peddling the Project Fear narrative yet again, says Lee. And Dougal, you're so transparent on Brexit, Christo. Where's Mike Graham when you need balance? God, if I had a pound for every time I had one of those tweets, I'd have, you know, well, I'd probably have enough money to be able to negotiate a trade deal with the European Union, which would be amazing. Wouldn't need a deal. I tell you what, Lee and Dougal, rather than just moaning about the fact that, oh God, it's another Remainer on the radio or whatever else, why don't you actually come back to me with a few facts? If that's Project Fear, Lee, I'm really, I will accept that, but I'd love you to hear what elements you believe are Project Fear, and of course, for you to come up with some ideas as to how we would overcome some of those issues. So, lots for us to discuss. 03444991000. Well, someone who I'm sure will have an opinion on what happened today is the political commentator, the broadcaster, and talk radio favourite, Andre Walker, who joins me live on the line. Andre, did I get all that right?
Christo, can I tell you something? I was delighted when you went into the break when you said we'd never sparred before. I'm looking forward to it, pal.
Well, we are indeed going to. Well, mind you, what I'm enjoying about tonight's conversation, and I've had a bit of a word with myself over the last couple of weeks, Andre, seriously, because I feel like the debate on both sides has become so toxic, and I'm trying, and I include myself in that, so I'm actually trying quite... I'm quite consciously trying to be a less toxic Ramona, and I'm appreciating Christo. All of the levers being a bit less toxic as well.
Christo, they don't want you on this station to be a less toxic Ramona. What they want is you to give it both barrels, and so I'm going to give you both barrels.
Go on, then.
First of all, I want to ask you an important question. How many days last year were Calais blockaded by French fishermen? 24 days. Right. Did you not get your food during that period? Look, the truth of the matter is that this idea of no deal is not dangerous at all. What is dangerous is being locked into a new treaty in which we pay $39 billion, not in order to get a trade deal, but to negotiate the negotiations on the trade deal.
Well, in fairness, Andre, then the $39 billion, the last EU spending review, as you will well know, takes us up to, or the last EU spending round, took us up to the end of 2020. And so, therefore, a lot of that money, not all of it indeed, but a lot of that money is for obligations and for projects that we had already agreed to sign up to up until the year 2020. Now, you're surely not suggesting to our closest trading partner that we renege on a deal that we made with them years ago and then expect them post 1st of November to be absolutely thrilled at offering us a trade deal.
Well, here's the deal the British government made with the European Union. The British government, under Gordon Brown, offered to give the British people a referendum on the European Constitution, which later became the Lisbon Treaty. And they reneged on that. What they said to the European Union was, hey, we're going to give the powers away. We're going to allow you to bring in this European Constitution, call it the Lisbon Treaty. Under that treaty, which the British people were almost all against, Article 50 says, look, if we leave the European Union, that's the end of it. So this is a treaty that they decided, that they agreed on, and that we didn't agree on.
But Andre, again.
And Christo, can I throw this at you?
Look, no, you've got to let me respond to what you just said, because Andre, you're talking about Gordon Brown and Tony Blair. These are people who had closer European integration in their manifestos and won three landslide elections. So no one was in favour of closer European integration when it was on the Labour manifesto.
The Labour manifesto.
The Tories were anti-EU during that period and no one voted for them.
No, hang on. The Labour manifesto said there would be a referendum on the European Constitution. Now remember, the European Constitution was defeated in pretty much every country where it was put to referenda. And then what they did was they simply rebranded it the Lisbon Treaty. The problem that we face, Christo, is this. Look, I'm a dual national, British and Irish. My dad's Greek, and I understand that you've got, I think, Greek citizenship as well. Mm. Look, the truth of the matter is many of us are European, and certainly we're pro-European. The problem has happened that for year after year after year, our politicians, along with those in Brussels, have lied to us about what's going on.
Okay, Andre, and I get that. I get all of that. But let's please, because I've heard that so much. If I hear that one more time, Andre, not just from you, but from everyone else, I'm liable to, I don't know, hang myself with the European flag. And I'll probably do it from the roof of this building. Now, but because what I feel happens when we have these debates, Andre, not you and I, because this is our first one, but look, you know, we just had a conversation about £39 billion, and you started talking about the Lisbon Treaty years and years before, which really has nothing to do now with the £39 billion. And what I think is really important, Andre, is rather than us sort of doing a vote-leave sort of manifesto, which is what's kind of happening, I really want to drill down with you how you would get over the practical issues with a no-deal Brexit? Because I understand what you're saying, that you don't believe that the port problems would be as they were. However, you're a smart man. You know about WTO rules. You know full well that our exports, which is really what we are far more concerned with, because that brings a lot of prosperity to the UK, we will end up putting regulations and tariffs onto goods that we produce here, which at the moment go to the EU for free. Now, that's a fact, isn't it, Andre?
But Christo, I don't think it's the remotest concern. So when you look at European multilateral trade, i.e. what we import and export from the European Union, firstly, we import twice as much as we export. Now, look, I don't want to have trade tariffs. I don't want to have money put on anything. I'm a low-tax guy. Mm. But if they put 10% tariffs on our goods, we put on 10% tariffs to their goods. And remember what that means. That means for every single pound that they charge us, we charge them £2. Now, in the fullness of time,
How is that going to keep us competitive, Andre? Because again, if you were someone who was selling your, a lot of people use meat as the example. So if you're selling your lamb to the EU post October 31st, you're quite right. Any meat we bring into the UK, we will have an equivalent tariff. But what is going to stop the European Union under those WTO rules, under no deal, saying, well, you know what, now, when the lamb leaves the United Kingdom, it's 45% more expensive. So why should we buy our lamb from the United Kingdom? What's going to stop?
And what is remarkable about this, when you look at countries like Hong Kong and Singapore, who have unilaterally dropped their trade tariffs. So imagine a scenario, Krista. Well, what we do is we follow the Hong Kong example. Well, what we do is we drop all of our trade tariffs. We just say, look, unilaterally, we're going to do that. We don't care whether you charge us tariffs on export. We're not going to charge you tariffs on imports.
But you can't now, do that you, under WTO rules say, because haven't, they've all got to be say, the same, haven't say, they?
Hang on a second, Chris. You absolutely can do that. You can drop all your tariffs if you want to. Now, what you would say logically is, presumably, if you drop all of your tariffs and do not do a deal with anybody else in the world, then presumably that would make you poorer. And yet every country that has tried it has become richer. And here's the reason. Because actually, if you excite economics within your country and allow global free trade and become hub for that, you'll become richer.
But Andre, how is that going to happen on November 4th? I'm not talking about what might happen in a few years' time once we've got it together. What is going to happen on November the 1st?
Christo, I love you to pieces, but you've been a maniac here.
No, I'm not. You're not actually explaining what's going to happen on November the 1st.
Listen to me. What I said was, ignore whether we have tariffs on our products being exported. If we have no import tariffs whatsoever, then every country that's ever done that in the history of humanity has become richer as a result, because you excite economics.
And export tariffs?
I told you, it doesn't make any difference. Right.
So you're telling me, Andre, just to absolutely clarify your position, because I really want to understand it. You are telling me that post November the 1st, under WTO rules, there wouldn't be a 45% tariff on the meat that we export. There wouldn't be, I think, is it a 10% tariff on cars? I think it is, isn't it?
Christo, calm. You're not listening. What I said was, every single country that abolishes its own tariffs has become richer as a result. Now, even though that sounds counterintuitive, the reason for it is really, really simple. Because actually, when you excite free trade within your own country, actually it will make you significantly richer. Now, the problem is, when you talk about what we're going to do in a no-deal scenario, what I'm saying to you is, look, if we drop all the tariffs on all the products coming into this country, whether they be from New Zealand, whether they be from France, the lot, we get rid of all of those EU tariffs, then we will become richer as a result. Now, even though that sounds counterintuitive, every single country that has ever done it has become richer as a result. And certainly, the free trade...
Which countries have done that scenario?
Singapore and Hong Kong. Singapore, by the way, Hong Kong went from being one of the poorest countries on earth in 1950, and by 1960, by pursuing this policy, became one of the richest per capita countries on earth.
So, sorry, Andre, are you talking about us actually having this sorted at some point during 2029?
Well, no, you can drop the tariffs as soon as we...
Yes, I know that, but you just used as an example the fact that that prosperity that we can expect from the example that you cited, that came about 10 years later. So your answer to what would happen on November the 1st is we would be... Andre, let me ask you this, because I'm really interested. I really want to get to it, right? So fine. November 1st, we can drop all of our tariffs, if that's what you're saying, right?
Yes.
Great. But... obviously, we would have to have tariffs from stuff going to the EU, wouldn't we?
Well, hang on. It's up to the EU to decide what the EU tariffs are. It's for us to decide what UK tariffs are. And the point you
but
made...
But we can't have differences in the under WTO, can you? You've got to have the equivalent
around the whole world. Christo, you're misunderstanding the scenario, right? And this is one of the things that Remainers do absolutely all the time. But let's just be clear on something, and I'm not trying to teach you to suck eggs. After we leave the European Union, what taxes we charge in our country will be decided by our country, and what taxes the EU charge will be decided by them. And so when people say there will be higher tariffs on products coming into the UK after we leave the EU on the WTO, that is nonsense, because what happens is when we leave the European Union, finally, after 40 years, we can decide what tariffs are charged on products coming in. Right, that's it.
Okay, what about the products going out?
Now, the WTO has their own suggested tariffs as a maximum, but we don't have to accept that maximum. We don't have to go up to that maximum. We can charge anything we want, including zero. Now, in terms of our
which we'd have to do to everyone.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why we dropped the lot.
And that would come on November 1st. We would implement zero tariffs on anything for anyone, including our trade going to the EU.
No, Christo. We can only do that on stuff that we can only do that for taxes in the UK, right?
Sorry, Andre, just because I've got to get to the news, I'm so late, but just tell me what would happen when it comes to the stuff that we are doing, the trade we're doing with the EU now, the exports we're doing to them now, what would happen to them post November the 1st from a tariff point of view?
Well, who cares?
What do you mean, who cares? It's a massive amount of our trade. We export loads to the EU. But we do export to the UK, Andre.
It's not a massive amount. I've told you about how to create an economic boom.
Yes, I know you have, but that's not... You've not told us... And that will take... It's fair to say, Andre, that's not going to happen.
No, it won't take any time. Look, the minute...
Will you answer, though, what will happen with the EU, please?
Christo, the minute we have the right to set our own trade tariffs, we can set them to zero. At the moment, we can't do that. For 40 years, we've been unable to do that. And here's the critical point.
And what would happen with the EU?
The problem that we've had under the EU is this, that they have restricted markets for the United Kingdom.
And what would happen to our trade with the EU post 1st of November?
Well, look.
What would happen with our trade with the EU? Sorry, Andre, your answer was, I don't care. What would be...
I think it's going to be better, but the most important thing is how we trade globally. And when I look at Australia and New Zealand saying to us that not only are they going to give us a free trade deal, but they're also going to give us free movement of labour. So forget your being able to live in Spain. You're going to be able to live in Australia, New Zealand...
Well, it's more than a million people living in Spain and all those countries who won't have any settled status post-no deal. And also, Andre... You did the typical lever thing. You accused me of doing the Ramona thing. You did the typical lever thing. I asked you repeatedly what would happen about the trade with the EU, and it was either I don't care, or you kind of started going on about some of the other things that were about the rest of the world. But I still don't feel like I got an answer to what would happen post 1st of November. But we've got to get to the news headlines. Time now, 2 minutes past midnight.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Good morning. 6 minutes past midnight. How are you? It's Christo here on Talk Radio. It's a special programme this morning, giving you the chance to react to everything that happened in Parliament over the last few hours. I have to make a correction. Andre, I hope you're listening. Because, unfortunately, under WTO rules, as I try to explain many, many times during our conversation, but I was accused of being an annoying Ramona and all those sorts of things. Unfortunately, we're unable to lower our tariffs for the EU under WTO rules or any specific country unless it had agreed a trade deal. We have to treat every WTO member around the world with which it does not have a trade deal in exactly the same way. And all of our WTO trade deals that we have at the moment are subject and under our membership of the European Union. So, firstly, it's not just as easy as cutting tariffs on absolutely everything. And again, I'm afraid that was a typical lever narrative of let's just make it as simple and binary as possible when it really isn't, firstly. And secondly, the only example that you could cite of a country that had done that, the prosperity came 10 years later. And I'm kind of worried about what's going to happen on November the 1st, 2019, not where we're going to be November the 1st, 2029. And again, by making these points and pointing out these facts about the myths of WTO, and some of it, by the way, the government has done some work to negate some of the effects of WTO and the tariffs that we will have. But at the end of the day, they can't just simply cut them all for everywhere. And simply pointing out those facts. And again, I'm not trying to sort of take a position here by pointing out these facts. Let's have a look at what Nigel had to say. Bet the ratings are low on Talk Radio with the Remain drivel being spouted by Christo and other persons who's denying democracy. The people decided, the people decided, leave. Now, Nigel, honestly, don't you feel like you cheapen the debate by accusing me of denying democracy when I'm simply pointing out the facts of the World Trade Organization? Why am I denying democracy or in some way a traitor when I simply point out what our trading arrangements will be post November the 1st? You know, I just think that that's so toxic, Nigel. So unbelievably toxic that you write that. Another one, Dougal. Getting boring now, Christo. See you. Stay a Remainers pimp. You know, shame on you, actually. Shame on you. Because when someone is pointing out the facts of the situation, you know, when we've got judges pointing out the lawfulness of a situation, and you just reduce it to you're denying democracy or you're a Ramona, I really think you're actually cheapening the debate. To, and unfortunately, when I get those sorts of tweets, I just think, well, you've got nothing else. You've got absolutely nothing else. Now, fight me morning, noon and night. Make a fool out of me. I relish you ringing and making a fool out of me if I've got something wrong. Please do. Fight me on the facts morning, noon and night. I relish it. I welcome it. Debate me on the facts. We've had some great conversations with leavers tonight based on facts. But to just simply call someone denying democracy for pointing out something that is a fact is frankly ridiculous. And it just shows you haven't got anything else. Got absolutely nothing else to offer. And that's a real shame because there are some people who voted leave and who are on the leave side who seem to have a more reasoned way of doing things. But I'm sorry, if you are someone who listens to the opposite side of the debate and then decides that you're denying democracy, you're an extremist. That's an extremist position. It is. You're a Brextremist. That's what I call them. 03444991000, though. I really do want to hear from you. If you've got facts to offer, though, please. If you've got sort of, you know, or if you can say, you know, you've got some sort of stance you can take based on facts. Andre has replied, you misquoted the WTO rules. You can't have tariffs that discriminate, but you're allowed to have zero on everyone. But you can't have zero on everyone, Andre, unless you've got to deal with them. Unless you're now suggesting that, like, the full fat and the reality check websites are corrupt and not telling the truth, because that's a lot of what they say about this. And, you know, would you like me to, I'll quote you again if you like. It's important to remember that under WTO's most favoured nation rules, the UK can't just lower tariffs for the EU or any specific country unless it had agreed a trade deal. It has to treat every WTO member around the world with which it does not have a trade deal in the same way. There is actually an exception to that, and that is the poorest countries in the world. And the poorest countries in the world under WTO rules, and I think there's a list of about 20 of them. I can't remember what it is. There's an expression for it, but there are some poor nations in the world that aren't subject to those WTO tariff rules because they are the poorest nations in the world. And they're allowed to have zero tariff, slightly different rules because it's been decided by the WTO. Why would Pascal Lamy, the former head of the WTO, say that WTO exit is absolutely cloud cuckoo land? I think he actually ended up laughing at Ian Duncan Smith. regarding that when he was talking about WTO. And so I think we just need to be really careful about like throwing things around like that, like they're really easy. 0344-499-1000 though, if you want to join the conversation. And of course, tell me why we're wrong. Tell me why Andre's wrong. Tell me why Dominic Grieve is wrong, who we'd heard from earlier. Tell me why you're still so angry about all of this. And what do you think would make you less angry at the moment? 0344-499-1000. So there's lots for us to dissect this morning. Shall we hear the result just once more from Lady Hale? And then we'll hear some more reaction. Jacob Rees-Mogg has been talking about it, as has Jeremy Corbyn, though I don't know his position on Brexit. It's probably changed in the last hour. Joe Swinson as well. And again, you might be surprised to hear that, but hear this, and I kind of get the logic of why the Liberal Democrats have decided to go full-on revoke. I kind of get it, because, you know, if they win, then win a mandate, they can say, well, look, we've got the mandate to revoke. I don't think that's going to get rid of any of the divisions in the United Kingdom, though. No way whatsoever. I think if there was perhaps another referendum and revoke and no deal and whatever else was on there, we'd have a chance of settling it, more of a chance. But I think the Liberal Democrat position of simply revoking Article 50, I kind of get it from electoral terms. But I think it's dangerous, because I don't think it will resolve things. I think we should leave, but I think we should do so in a managed way. 0344-499-1000. But yes, let's get Lady Hale's result and what she has to say about the Prime Minister's advice.
This court has already concluded that the Prime Minister's advice to Her Majesty was unlawful, void and of no effect. This means that the order in council to which it led was also unlawful, void, and of no effect, and should be quashed. This means that when the Royal Commissioners walked into the House of Lords, it was as if they had walked in with a blank sheet of paper. The prorogation was also void and of no effect. Parliament has not been prorogued. This is the unanimous judgment of all 11 justices.
So there we go. That's what the Lady Hale had to say about that. Now, it seems odd that the government was so enthusiastic about fighting this ruling about the prorogation and whether it was lawful or not. Because, well, let's remind ourselves of what Jacob Rees-Mogg said at the time that the prorogation started.
People that might say this is an undemocratic move.
So they wouldn't know what they were talking about. It's normal functioning of our constitution.
And, I mean, how can you put people's minds at ease about a no-deal Brexit? I mean, this seems to be the way that we're heading now.
Well, the government is working very hard to get a deal, as the Prime Minister has said.
So anyone that says it isn't democratic doesn't know what they're talking about. Sounds like Lady Hale doesn't know what she's talking about then. I mean, if it's not undemocratic, and if it means that someone doesn't know what they're talking about, if they think it is, then why would you possibly want to prorogue Parliament? Why would you feel the need to do it? The problem is that all the people who are denying that proroguing was done to avoid no deal, they just have absolutely no credibility, because they then have no argument as to why you would prorogue Parliament. It's one of those strange contradictions, I think, in the argument. But then, of course, there are a lot of strange contradictions in this argument. You know, I don't understand why the government felt the need to challenge the Supreme Court on this if they didn't want to prorogue Parliament to avoid a no-deal Brexit. You know, it's like the contradictions over the backstop as well, though. You know, as you know, the narrative from people who are lying to you, by the way, is that the EU is being unreasonable and trying to keep us into this sort of very nasty backstop of Northern Ireland. That's not true at all. The EU's job is to protect the single market. That's a fact. That was something that we had actually signed up to. The EU are only doing what we've accused them of doing over the last 40 years, and we've accused them of not doing over the last 40 years, and that is protecting its sovereign nations who are members. And that's precisely what it's doing with Ireland. And if all those people who voted against Theresa May's bill because of the backstop seem to think it's terribly unlawful and a completely unreasonable part of her withdrawal agreement, well, they're the same people, like Boris Johnson, Draco Rees-Mogg, David Davis, all those people who said that there were solutions out there. And Boris Johnson literally went on TV and radio to say that there was a solution to the Irish border, technological solution. The solution is there, definitely got the solution. Well, if you were telling the truth, why would you object to the backstop? You'd have no reason to, because the backstop would never be invoked, because you've got a solution. But of course, we know you're lying. And it's the same as today. Oh, we didn't prorogue Parliament because of Brexit. But we're very angry now that Parliament comes back because it might have something to do with Brexit. Of course, they're lying. And it's just a really, really sad state of affairs, I think, because we've got people in public office who are woefully dishonest. We've got people in public office who are not telling the truth. We've got people in public office who are prepared to take us off a cliff, who don't, I think, believe really, I don't really believe that all of them understand the situation. And when someone says, look, can we just put the brakes on and exercise a bit of caution here? That doesn't make them someone who denies democracy. That doesn't make them an awful person. That doesn't make them a Ramona that wants to deny 17.4 million. Not at all. It's just simply saying, look, can we just exercise a bit of caution here? And I'm really sorry that the person that was elected in 2017 now turns out to not be the person that you want to have been negotiating the deal. And I'm really sorry that the leaving of the EU that you were sold that would be a really, really simple thing that actually has been not simple at all, and that you were sold a complete load of claptrap. I'm really sorry about that. We are still going to leave, but can we just do so in a moderate way? Can we just do so in a way that isn't barking mad? Because why should the whole country suffer just because the people who are in charge have not been able to square a circle they sold you? And that's what this is all about, unfortunately. 0344 499 1000, though, if you want to join the conversation. Maybe I've said something that you agree with. Maybe I've said something you completely disagree with. And of course, what do you think is going to happen in Parliament today? Do you think we're going to be looking at Boris Johnson resigning? I'd say not, because the man is utterly shameless, but you never know. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. And there we go. Ron Salmon, absolutely, on Twitter, summing this up. I guess the vote of 11 outweigh 17.4 million people. Ron, the vote of 11 has nothing to do with 17.4 million people. And Ron, I don't know why you made that connection, because the person who's been our Prime Minister has repeatedly said that the prorogation of Parliament has nothing to do with the 17.4 million who voted Brexit. Well, why would you make the connection, Ron? This is all so frustrating. It really is. And I get your frustration, and I get if you're a Leaver, you're as angry as well. We've all been failed. We've all been let down. And you know what? We'll all have therapy with each other and talk more about it coming up here on Talk Radio.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. This is Talk Radio.
Good morning, 22 minutes past midnight. We're now into Wednesday morning. And, oh, by the way, hello to, I was asked to do a shout out, seriously. This isn't Kiss FM. I can't remember who it was that asked me to do a little shout out to them who was listening, but evening to you, Sean. It was not my mother, though I wouldn't be surprised. What time is it? 23 minutes past midnight. She'd only been on the gin for about 12 hours solid at the moment, so it could have been her. Krista, can you give us a shout out in Minnesota? I'm now tuning in on the wireless. Thank you very much indeed for that, James. And the Superior Court did you guys in the British Isles proud today. And another one here before we speak to YouGov, by the way. We're going to speak to them in just a second about where we are with the polling on all the big issues at the moment. Albert says, 17.4 million people is inaccurate. I voted Leave and I regret it. I don't want to be included in that figure. And number two, what about all the people who didn't or couldn't vote last time? A second ref would have a far much bigger turnout, says Albert. Well, obviously, all eyes are now going to be on what's going to be happening in Parliament over the course of the day. They are going to be reconvening at 11:30, and a lot of people are saying after today's Supreme Court ruling, or yesterday's, I should say, Boris Johnson has no other option but to resign. But what do you think about that? And I don't just mean for you to call me. I'm talking about the polling on this. Well, Connor Ibbotson is a researcher at YouGov and joins us live on the line. Morning to you, Connor.
How are you?
What would you like to tell us, actually, this tonight? Because you've just done some hot-off-the-press polling about what the Prime Minister should actually do next. So do you want to run us through some of that?
Yeah, so we've done some snap polls, and what they're showing is that, on the whole, the general public agrees with the decision of the Supreme Court. But when it comes to what Boris Johnson should do next, Britons are split on whether he should stay or whether he should go.
So can I just ask let's start with the decision of the Supreme Court today. So, I mean, firstly, well done, you guys, for getting the polling done so quickly. It's brilliant to be able to dissect these results. Now, you say that 49% say that they agree with the Supreme Court ruling, but I presume that means that the 51% are split on whether they disagree with it.
It's a 30% disagree, and then the remainder would be don't know.
Right, okay, so that's a pretty strong turnout for the almost half saying that they agree with the Supreme Court ruling. What are leavers saying about this at the moment? Because obviously we've been hearing from a lot of people this morning here on Talk Radio, a lot of people on the leave side of the debate, who are absolutely genuine in thinking that the judiciary are showing bias here. So are there any leave voters who have expressed an opinion on whether they agree or disagree with what the Supreme Court have come up with?
So what our figures show for leave voters is 22% in favour of the Supreme Court, but 57 disagreeing with the Supreme Court's ruling.
That's interesting that nearly one in five actually agree that Parliament shouldn't have been prorogued. I would have expected the figure of those people who were disagree with the Supreme Court actually in the leave side, actually I thought that would be higher than 57%. Really interesting figures there. What about the Prime Minister resigning? Because a lot of people are calling for that, saying after his position of apparently misleading the Queen and being unlawful, he has absolutely no choice but to go.
As I said, the opinion of the public is a lot more split there. Our polling shows 43% saying he should go and 39% saying he should not go. So not could go either way there, really. The figures are a little bit clearer if you split it out amongst the parties and Remain voters and Leave voters.
And what do they say?
Well, Conservative voters very much in favour of Boris Johnson staying. Labour, Lib Dem, very much in favour of him going.
Very, very interesting. Listen, Conor Inibertson, nice to catch up with you, researcher at YouGov, just to find out where the public is at the moment with some of these polls. What do you make of what you've just heard? And are you a leaver who agrees with what the Supreme Court came up with today? And are you a remainer who disagrees with what the Supreme Court came up with today? Really interested to know the differences on that one. 0344 499 1000. And thank you, Kyle. Finally, some sense. Thanks, Christo, for that one. Though Ron has tweeted again, saying as well, we are now ruled by 11 justices of the Supreme Court, unelected, unaccountable, and unimpeachable in the twilight years of the country. We are now going down a path no country should go, and that is over the voting public. It's a sad day for the UK, thanks to 11 people. Well, come on, tell me whether you agree with that. Really strong words there. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call.
No nonsense discussion.
It's Speech Radio, Jim.
This is Talk Radio.
Good morning. Just approaching 12:30 on this Wednesday morning. It's a special programme for you this morning, looking back as to what's happened in Parliament over the last 24 hours and, of course, in the Supreme Court, more importantly, because, as we all know, not much been going on in Parliament, actually. It's Christo here, and thank you very much indeed for your company and all of your tweets and your calls, some of which are good, some of which are bad, many of which are quite ugly. Let's talk to Phil in Greater Manchester about the events of the last 24 hours. Morning to you, Phil.
How are you? All right?
Fine, thank you. So the Supreme Court, many people feel really passionate about what happened yesterday. Where do you stand? What's made you want to pick up the phone and talk about it?
I don't normally ring in. I do listen a lot to yourself and to the Sport Radio as well. I don't normally vote, don't normally get involved in any of that sort of thing. I do have an opinion.
Yeah.
I think that we're a laughing stock. I think generally, if you look at the people in the EU, they do bring a lot of good things to the UK. I think if I was to go back 3 years myself and I was to vote, I'd probably vote Remain. I think now, if I vote now, I'd definitely vote Leave.
I think why would you vote Leave now, and why would you have... Did you say you voted Remain before, Phil, or you considered...
No, I think I would have done, because I didn't think I didn't quite understand it before, so I didn't vote on something I didn't understand.
So you didn't vote in the referendum at all, but now if there was a new referendum, you'd vote Leave?
I think what we've got is we've got a situation where... I didn't feel comfortable voting it 3 years ago, so I didn't vote because I didn't understand really what was going on properly. So I just didn't vote, didn't pay any attention to it. I think now, because of what we know a lot more about what we can see. And I think it's just a shambles, to be quite honest with you. I think that these people, you know...
Who are these people, Phil, that's made you angry?
You've got the likes of John Major piping up with himself, you know, about proroguing. I mean, didn't he prorogue Parliament himself? You know what I mean? The guy's just laughable.
I mean, by the way, Phil, absolutely, I take on board that hypocrisy, and you're quite right, and it's a really good point to make. John Major did prorogue Parliament, and I think, if I remember rightly, it was during the cash for... questions,
because he didn't want to answer
the questions. However, what I will say to that, though, is yes, cash for questions was extremely controversial, and it absolutely deserved its scrutiny in Parliament, and he was wrong to do that. But I would, in my opinion, see that the constitutional crisis about our future relationship with most of the countries in the world and our Parliament itself remaining open for that scrutiny of such, probably the most important decision we'll ever make, I see that as more important than the cash for questions. As important as that was, I think this as more serious.
The point
you,
I'd like
you,
to...
You agree with that, though, Phil, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the biggest point in British history, to be quite honest with you.
But I take your point about the hypocrisy of John Major, and he probably wasn't the right person to do this.
I think we've got these people, that like John Major, that have all the says, and the Jeremy Corbyns that can't make his mind up. I mean, I think the Labour Party have come out and said, we'll do a general election, then we'll make our mind up what we're going to do with Brexit. I mean, I think, to be quite honest with you, Labour, if they do have a general election, they're going to get a big shock.
So do you think there should be a general election now or not?
100%. I think all this talk of another referendum is just a load of... That's just... You know, that's not democracy at all.
All right. Then, Phil, though, what do you think if we had a general election now? Because I'm not necessarily against the idea of a general election. I'm never against more democracy. I'm never against people having their say. However, do you understand why, with the Prime Minister that we have, and perhaps with his track record for bending the truth, shall we say, do you understand why Parliament felt that they couldn't vote for a general election? Because if they did, let me just finish the question, Phil. If they did vote for a general election, because Boris would set the date, he'd simply set it for after October the 31st, meaning that no deal would still happen. So that's why the election wasn't called, if you remember. Do you agree with that decision, or do you think that it should have been called anyway?
I think Labour bottled out. I think Labour, I don't believe that in any sort of politics or any sort of real world that you could say, you're not telling me that you couldn't have gone and had a meeting with Boris Johnson and said to him, listen, we'll have your election, but you've got to make sure that you put it in.
But he wouldn't agree to. They did do that, Phil, and he wouldn't agree to it. They wanted it written in writing that Boris would do the election in the middle of November, and he wouldn't do that because he wanted to hold it.
I think the issue we've got is we've got one side saying, and this is just me as an average person. I mean, I watch the news when I get home. I work nights. I watch the news. My missus says to me, you need to stop watching the news and winding yourself up. I watch the news, and it's kind of, a lot of the time, I'm very taken back, because what you see a lot of is people just generally going back on what they said four, maybe 3 years ago, you know.
I agree. I mean, Nigel Farage a couple of weeks ago was tweeting how much he was agreeing with the prorogation of Parliament. Now he's saying that Boris Johnson should resign. People have changed them, and that's only in the last two weeks.
Think, I don't think they should have had a prorogation. But I think, to be quite honest with you, if you ask an average person that actually has been following it or has got any interest in it, we would probably all turn around and go, well, what would be the point anyway? Because what are all these politicians going to do in the next 37 days? What are they going to do in the next 37 days that they've not done in 3 years?
No, very good point, Phil. And I think that's why a lot of people wanted to stop No Deal, because they know deep down we're probably not going to get a deal. And certainly when you've got the EU contradicting what the government has said about how much progress is being made in that deal, it doesn't fill you with much confidence. Kyle is in Rochdale. Morning to you, Kyle.
Good morning, Christo. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. So what do you make of where the debate is so far, especially when we're looking at what the Supreme Court had to say? Because we're getting a lot of people saying, look, it's biased. It's 11 people versus 17.4 million. I mean, I think that's hugely dangerous to say those sorts of things. But what do you think?
Well, the point that has upset me particularly, and there were a couple of other points from the previous caller, but the main point I rang up about that's really upset me is that people are saying just about, you know, oh, this is wrong or whatever. No, today was never about Brexit. Should we vote for it? Should we, you know, they're trying to overturn Brexit. And I see people on my Twitter feed, on Facebook, who are really upset by what's going on. But it's like, no, today was never about that. It was about a point of law. I studied law many, many years ago. And that's the whole thing about
it. But Kyle, do you see, though, because I do, and it frustrates me and it annoys me, but I absolutely see and respect why people who voted Leave, who probably have felt quite disenfranchised prior to the vote, and certainly in the last 3 years that they have, do you understand why a lot of those people just look at this? They almost think they don't care about the detail. All they see is that this is yet more people in London, in the establishment, who are trying to put barriers up in front of what they voted for. Now, you might not agree with it, but you must surely see that that's their opinion.
I can understand their point of view. But what I wouldn't have done, what I wouldn't have done is prorogue Parliament in the first place. There are enough mechanisms in place in the system where you could have basically filibustered it out and kept going until that particular day. Do you know what I mean? It just annoys me that people aren't grasping the Supreme Court. They're just looking at it with complete blinkers and saying, oh, well, you know, it's overturned Brexit or it's ruined Brexit. Well, I'm a Remainer. However, but even that is a pejorative term.
And as a Remain, because you're right actually. Because it's I'm interested to know whether people voted Leave or Remain. But you're quite right, because I'm a Remainer who thinks we should leave with a deal. Now, I don't know what that makes me, because I don't think we should leave, but I do think we should fulfil the result of the referendum with a deal. Now, I'm going to get all sorts of accusations that I'm stunting democracy, that I'm disrespectful to people and all that kind of stuff. Because now, if you don't endorse No Deal, you're seen as a Remainer. It's the most extraordinary situation we're in.
I find it very strange. I work with a guy who was like, well, I voted Remain. But what he said to me is, obviously, he's a big football fan. Sorry for the analogy. Mm-hmm. But he was like, you can't keep playing the game, you know, until you get the result you want. So I totally accept that. And I totally
accept, but in fairness, though, if you played a game and then they changed the rules halfway through, you'd want to start the game again. And I think that a lot of people, and I think on both sides this is the case, and it was on the Remain side as well, and I've really worked on the last, you know, I think we all need to work on trying to be a bit more moderate about how we're discussing all of this. But I think a lot of people have basically lied through the teeth, and that they have basically left us in this situation where we are up the proverbial creek and no one believes anything that anyone's saying anymore. And we've got a situation which I never thought I'd ever see in my life, where the Supreme Court, you know, the highest judges of the land, the highest judges that most people, I would say, who voted Leave, voted that way in order to give those judges the powers that they have felt have been relegated to Brussels all these years. Now we've got a situation where those people who voted to give those judges more powers now believe those very same judges are biased.
Yeah, it's a completely bizarre situation. I remember, the one that I remember from law is that in any case there is one, the ratio decidendi, which is, you can look at any legal case and there is one turning point. And I find it very bizarre that the people who've sort of said, oh, well, we want sovereignty. So, well, you've got your sovereignty and now you're saying, oh, well, we don't agree with it. Well, you can't disagree with it because, you know, it's not the EU court. And I think it was somebody before, some sort of wagyu sort of said, well, do you know what? Perhaps Boris now could appeal to the European courts and perhaps you could overturn it.
Could
it's
you imagine?
It's complete nonsense.
Well, I don't, well, they're not our highest court anymore anyway, are they? But yeah, it is. But it would have been, what a delicious irony it would have been that actually it would have been the European court that would have made all of this happen. Just very briefly, Kyle, before we've got to move on, what next? Mm-hmm. Do you think Boris is in a position where he can stay as Prime Minister? I mean, what do you think?
Well, excuse me, really quickly, in normal circumstances, which is obviously not what we're dealing with, I thought he would have gone out of shame or tendered his resignation tomorrow. I don't think he will. I think he'll hang on. I don't think Dominic Cummings is doing. And yeah, I just find it all very, and sorry, to answer really, really quickly, the previous caller, you know, if you were Jeremy Corbyn or any of the opposition parties, you know, why would you sort of agree to a general election when somebody can say, well, okay, I'll do it this day, but then I'll shift the goalposts, so it'll happen and you'll crash out by default anyway. Complete nonsense.
And again, I don't blame anyone that doesn't trust Boris Johnson. I'm sorry to say it, but I really don't blame anyone. And we've ended up with the most bizarre situation in our politics where we've got a Prime Minister who deep down is a Remainer, who voted Leave for his political reasons, who's now selling Leave, which he never really wanted. And you've got the leader of the Labour Party who are now backing a referendum that would have Remain on the ballot, even though he's campaigned for Leave all his life until he became the leader of the Labour Party. It's utterly bizarre.
Absolutely.
It's so weird. Thanks very much indeed. That is Kyle in Rochdale. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Paul Connew, who's the columnist at the New European. And, well, I'm sure he'll have some opinions on today's momentous, or yesterday, I should say, momentous ruling by the Supreme Court. We'll have more of your texts and tweets and lots more besides. So that's all coming up here on Talk Radio.
Supercharged current affairs debate and electrifying opinion. This is Talk Radio.
Good morning, 12:45. Thank you to Paula, by the way, enjoying the debate tonight, glued to the radio. Well, you know what I've liked about this programme, and I keep making this point, is that I feel like it hasn't been a toxic Brexit debate. Might have got a tiny bit toxic with Andre. Sorry, Andre, love you. But actually, I don't think it's been horribly toxic because it really can be. It can be so horrible. And I know that being a Remainer, that does your head in sometimes. And I know that you being Leavers, many of you, you know, drives me up the wall sometimes. But I really enjoy the fact that we've actually been able to debate it and put forward facts to each other and opinions that haven't actually resulted in us all wanting to tear each other's hair out and various other body parts maybe as well. 03444991000 if you want to join the debate yourself. And as you will know, the reason we're having this conversation is because of the pretty unprecedented ruling of the Supreme Court stating that suspending Parliament was unlawful. Well, Paul Connew is a columnist at the New European and joins us live on the line. Morning to you, Paul.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning. Obviously, as a columnist from the New European, I presume you are overjoyed at what was decided yesterday.
Very pleased, but it's a long way from the end of the pier. Show there's a long way to go. But it's an extraordinary situation. We have a prime minister who is no longer a lawmaker but a lawbreaker. The same applies to the Attorney General, Geoffrey Cox QC, who's apparently advised him to go down the proroguing route, and of course Jacob Rees-Mogg, the minister for the 17th, 18th, or 19th century, whichever you prefer, in fact, and this man who actually, you know, seems to adore the monarchy, and yet he's actually helped to lie to the Queen. I mean, you couldn't make this up. It's it makes any episode of The Thick of It look like a fly in the wall documentary.
Like it or loathe it, Paul, people are going to be listening to this, listening to what you're saying, and they're going to be thinking that Boris, Jacob Rees-Mogg, all of that gang of people, the government as I like to call them, they're going to be thinking all those people that were acting in a way in which would deliver the Democratic 17.4 million vote. And actually, the judiciary, the House of Commons, people like you and I, we are the ones that are putting up these barriers to Boris and the like delivering that Democratic mandate. Do you see their point? Do you see their frustration, Paul?
Some people will see that, but I'm in an interesting position because I was one of the very few, even though I'm a staunch Remainer, I was one of the very few pundits who publicly predicted that Leave would win the 2016 referendum. And I did that based upon my own sort of DIY research in Labour, Heartland, Northern and Midland seats, which I thought were going to be, you know, the crucial areas. Now, I've been chronicling or, you know, monitoring my original research sample, and around half of my original Leave sample have now changed their minds, or at least back a second referendum.
Hmm.
There are various reasons they've taken that route, but in fact, the most dominant of those reasons is that they did not want a no-deal Brexit, didn't vote for a no-deal Brexit. In fact, the Leave campaign, including Boris Johnson, you know, weren't arguing, you know, for a no-deal Brexit, quite the reverse. I was on a platform with Boris very early in the campaign when, in response to one audience member's question, he actually predicted, he didn't quite use the word Johnny Foreigner, but he said that that the EU would roll over, we'd have control of our borders, and we'd have full access to the single market, and the customs union.
Paul, you won't get any argument from me on that one. I think the audacity of the Leave side now to use the words of Remainers that they denied would happen at the time as now justification.
Well, exactly. It's
unbelievable that they actually have the audacity to do that, because of course you're quite right. All those people that predicted that this was going to be far more difficult than was being told to the electorate, all those people were shouted down as Project Fear and as those people who were talking down Britain. So I absolutely.
But the supreme irony, you know, of yesterday's, you know, momentous historic ruling by the Supreme Court. But the supreme irony about that Supreme Court ruling is that Boris Johnson, Rees-Mogg and co. were hoisted on the petard of one of their own sacraments from the referendum campaign, parliamentary sovereignty and UK judges exerting UK law. You couldn't make it up.
I agree. I mean, yeah, no one's going to be questioning whether the UK Parliament and the UK judiciary is sovereign today, are they? Because, of course, they've proven many times over the last few weeks that they are. But a lot of people, Paul, will be listening again to what you're saying, look, it might have been based on a load of claptrap. It might be loads more difficult than we thought. And it might turn out that we have to go with no deal. We don't care. We just want out. The number of tweets I get from people where you try and rationally explain the implications. And you know what? They either don't believe you or they do and they don't care. Now, how on earth, Paul, are people like you, people like I, people like the politicians in Westminster who are trying to work towards the national interest by not having us crash out with no deal, how do those people convince the no dealers who think, you know what, screw it, we don't care, we just want out?
I respect those people, they're entitled to that viewpoint, but we were not campaigning, or rather the Leave campaign were not campaigning on no deal. And I think I also predicted when I predicted that Leave would win the referendum that we would end up needing a second referendum, and I still suspect that is where we're going to end up.
You share your opinion with Jacob Rees-Mogg, who of course has been quoted, and there is audio knocking around of him saying precisely the same thing, which of course he now has backtracked on a little. Paul Connew, columnist at the New European, we've got to leave it there, but really appreciate your view and, of course, you know, putting across why you believe it's a little bit different what's happening at the moment and why a second referendum is absolutely necessary. Probably got time for just one more call. Maybe we'll come back to that in just a moment. And a few other tweets as well. Just try and get one more tweet in, actually, from some of you. What else? Oh, that's mainly Andre, actually, just replying about how wonderful the show is. And I appreciate that, Andre. The check is in the post. Andy is in Shepton Mallet. Morning to you, Andy. Just got time to have the final word on this, nearly.
Hey, Andy, I'm dismayed. I've been watching this whole process for ages. And
haven't we all, Andy?
Yeah, haven't we all? Haven't we all? Supreme Court ruling, okay, look, let's bypass that. We know where it is. Everybody's talked about it all day. That's where we are.
But, and you, do you, can I just ask before we move on from that, you agree or disagree with it?
I totally disagree.
Okay, but you agree.
I tell you what I disagree with. I don't disagree with the decision. I disagree, and where I find a little bit suspicious is a unanimous vote.
Well, could that not be that they just are genuinely very, very sure that that is the case? I mean, I think that doesn't make me suspicious. What would make me more suspicious if it was split? Then there would be a grey area, whereas this is pretty...
Listen, Boris Johnson has tried to deliver... Boris Johnson was a great mayor. London introduced cycles. He was all up for climate change.
That was Ken Livingstone, actually.
And he's come in now. He's took the Prime Minister's job, and he's promised to deliver what we all voted for, what we wanted in 2016. We wanted to leave the EU. Deal or no deal, that wasn't given on the table. That wasn't on the table in the referendum. It wasn't said.
No, because in fairness, the Leave side... But Andy, in fairness, the Leave side did repeatedly say that that no deal was Project Fear and that a deal would be the... In fact, I think Liam Fox said the easiest deal in history. So in fairness, there is an argument to say, Andy, whether you agree with it or not, that anyone who voted Leave, or a lot of people who voted Leave, did so believing that it would be an easy process to get a deal. Because that's what they were told, repeatedly.
Right, okay, so the EU, all right, listen, what I want to get down to is we somehow, regardless of all this, there needs to be some serious change within the parliament structure. Now, leave, stay, remain, whatever you want to do. What I'm saying to you is, and if I'm fortunate enough to have the last word on this, wouldn't it be nice to bring Britain back to a seasonal produce thing? Food is far too cheap. We need to have produce.
Do you know when prawns are in season?
Do you know when carrots are in season? Do you know when tomatoes are in season?
Do you want higher prices, Andy? Seriously.
Yes, I do, and I'm a publican. I'm a publican. I own a pub, and I serve food.
But it's generally most people don't see that as a good thing.
Publicans need to survive on selling food.
But a lot of people don't see higher prices as a good thing, Andy. And a lot of people, again, wouldn't have put that cross in the box for Leave. Most people vote for something to be better. They don't vote for something to be... All right, Andy, there's enough cheap food out there. Look, we've got to leave it because, well, I've been his warm-up act, and now the main act is here. We call him Dazzler Morris.
Dazzler, I'll go for that, Dazzler Morris.
Dazzler, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you, yes, I'm okay. I mean, you know what, so committed are people to their viewpoint at the moment, so entrenched are they in what they believe, that they are prepared to say things like that. The idea that somebody would say, yes, I do want prices to be higher because I'm so committed to Brexit.
It's kind of staggering, and it's kind of staggering that people would vote as well for a situation where our goods that we export under the WTOs would be a higher price. Now that's a fact, and the problem is that a lot of people will take those consequences because they're so passionate about leaving the EU. And and I've never really seen the problems that are there with the EU enough to justify us kind of going off a cliff edge.
Sure. And there was another really great example of this when the Brexit Party abstained from a vote last week. Did you see this? It might have been earlier this week.
Was this Nazanin Zaghari-Ratcliffe?
It was Ms. Ratcliffe, who is currently imprisoned in Iran. The EU wanted to, their official stance was to put pressure on Iran to release her and some other EU members essentially who were imprisoned in Iran, and so committed with the Brexit Party to not engaging with the European Union that they were prepared to abstain on that vote, to not use the opportunity that they have to exercise a piece of humanity.
I cannot possibly think why a party that's led by Nigel Farage wouldn't want to help British citizen Nazanin Zaghari-Ratcliffe, who is in an Iranian jail. I can't think what it might be about her that would make him not interested to help, but I couldn't possibly imagine. I couldn't possibly speculate, and nor would I. Daryl, what's coming up on your programme?
More of that on the way after 1 o'clock this morning. We're going to get into more of this. And, you know, the great thing about the dead of the night is that it clears the senses, doesn't it? And you can kind of make, you know, hopefully better judgment calls, and you can...
Daryl, I think about you often in the middle of the night.
Very, very, barely
a night goes by where I don't think about you.
Same.
And you're quite right. Yeah. When I do, my senses
are clear.
It's amazing. So will you be continuing this debate?
Yeah, so we want to hear from you on that. We're also going to talk about Trump as well, because there's some big news there. One constitutional issue.
They're going to impeach him.
I know. You wait for it to come up. One for coming, two come along at once.
Two law-breaking heads of government.
Yeah. So we'll get into that as well after 1 o'clock. And some of the weirder, more wonderful things as well into the night.
Wonderful. Daryl Morris doing a sterling job on his new overnight programme here on Talk Radio, which is coming up next. That's it from me. Thank you so much for the debate tonight, this morning. It's been really, really enjoyable. Don't go anywhere, because, of course, Daryl Morris next here on Talk Radio.
We are Talk Radio.